using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 12th of April, year of our Lord, 2021, day 394 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to take a look at what I think is the overreaching analogy, the metaphor of what has happened to us over this last year. As we see the move to vaccinate us, to impose a vaccine passport, I'm going to talk about how this is really like ransomware. That's what this is. Wear it on your face, then put it in your arm. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Yes, it is a full court press on trying to control information and pushing back against what they don't want us to know. As a matter of fact, we have YouTube coming out as they just purged a video over the weekend of Ron DeSantis. He was talking about how children don't need to wear masks. They're really not at risk for this, by the way. According to the government's own figures, I guess they forgot to cook the books on that end. Because this whole thing is basically a relabeling of the actuarial tables. The average age is 80 years old, and people have multiple comorbidities. It's been that way since before we locked down America, as a matter of fact. We already had 2 weeks' worth of data out of Italy showing that. And here, after a year of lockdown, we still see the same thing. And it remains the same, regardless of the differences in lockdown intensity in different states, California versus Florida, or different countries, the UK versus Sweden. The lockdown has made absolutely no difference. And so as Ron DeSantis was talking about that, I mean, you might want to let people have access to information and decide for themselves, but no, not YouTube. YouTube has clear policies around COVID-19 medical information, they say misinformation, to support the health and safety of our users. And so they said, we remove the video because it included content that contradicts the consensus of authorities. I've seen no more concise definition of authoritarian censorship than that. Anything that contradicts the consensus of authorities will not be allowed. This is not science. Science is not argument based on authority figures. As a matter of fact, that was one of the first things when Francis Bacon proposed the scientific method. That was the first thing he attacked. He said, we got to stop having science being dictated by the authority figures. It also needs to be, we need to stop having science be whatever the general consensus is at the moment. It needs to be debated. It needs to be questioned. That's the only time you have an advance in science is when you have skeptical analysis of the data. But you should have data that we can see. You shouldn't try to hide it, which is what we're seeing here. There is absolutely no way for us to verify any of these numbers that they're giving us, right? Yeah, we got some numbers here. I got surges. I got variants. Do you really? Did you do any autopsies on the people that you claim died from COVID? No. Did you do any tests? Certainly not in the early days. They didn't even have the PCR tests. Are those PCR tests now valid? In the early days, they were just telling people to do a clinical judgment of that. And of course, if you decide that these people have COVID, I'll give you $12,000 bonus. How about that? Says the federal government, says the Trump administration. But here's the bottom line. Now, understand that when they put this in, let me read you the full quote, because it's not quite as clear. It included content that contradicts the consensus of local and global health authorities. But here's the essence of it. It contradicts consensus of authorities. That is never science. Never science. We have a high school coach fired after refusing to enforce what he called senseless, irrational BS. He says, I will not force my students outside while they're exercising and need oxygen. I will not force them to wear a mask. Track and field coach Bradley Keyes told reporters in New Hampshire that he's been fired after refusing to force students to wear masks outside while engaged in sporting activities. He said, I will not stand up in front of kids and lie to them and tell them that these masks are doing anything worthwhile out in an open field with the wind blowing and the sun shining. He said, and explained this in a letter to the school's athletics director, he said, these insane policies are robbing kids of once-in-a-lifetime opportunities for no valid reason other than irrational fear and going along with the sheep, going along with the authority figures. Must not question them. Understand, this is the essence of what we're facing right now. This is what we're facing from Google. This is what we're facing from the technocrats, the technocracy, the corporatocracy, whatever you want to call it. It is fascism. It is the merger of these big corporations, pharmaceutical corporations, the neo-Marxists out of Silicon Valley who have decided that they are going to control everything, and especially our speech, because that's where it begins. And so kudos to Bradley Keyes, who refused to live by lies, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn pointed out. Do not live by lies. That's how we defeat these people. And we're going to talk today about what happened over the weekend in Canada. More things happened in Canada. But also the internal struggle that is happening within Christian churches as you have individuals that are looked up to as leaders, both Protestant and Catholic, who are being used by the authorities to push vaccines on the people who trust them. If you're in a position of leadership, if you're going to speak on something, you better know what you're talking about. I'm not going to cut these people any slack. You shouldn't either, and you shouldn't listen to them. We'll talk about it. These people who want to shut down any investigation, they will remove the video of a governor talking, of a president talking. They will fire anybody who refuses to live by their lies. Anybody who has a different opinion from them, they will purge. This should tell you all you need to know. That's all you need to know to resist these people. The time for debate is over when they don't allow for debate, isn't it? He said, I'll not stand up in front of the kids and lie to them. He said, these insane policies, as he wrote to the athletics director, are robbing kids of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He said, fire me if you must. And so the school did. He said he wanted to make a point about people just accepting draconian restrictions. He said, I just think people haven't pushed back. And I decided it was time to push back. It is time. It is well past time. We have to have, if we can't get the lesser magistrates to help us, and in some cases we've had good sheriffs who have done that, David Hathaway, that I interviewed last week in Arizona, if you haven't seen that interview, you need to see it. As he pointed out, you know, you can put people in legislative office, and they're going to be marginalized. There's not really anything that they can do. They can make speeches. They can try to educate people. That basically is the reason that I even ran as essentially a paper candidate back in the mid-90s, because that was one way that you could engage in the debate. But then at that point, people will come to you. If you get elected, people will come to you sometimes as an elected official. But when you look at what is going to happen in a legislative body, they're just going to bury your stuff in a committee. It'll never even get to the floor to even be voted on. So you might be able to get some press attention and talk to people and bring these issues up. But other than that, you're not going to be able to do anything. But as Sheriff Hathaway pointed out, in that position, you have executive power and you have the ability to make decisions. And we have seen good sheriffs make things worse. We've seen good sheriffs make things better, and bad sheriffs have made things worse. It's kind of like, you know, having a gun, right? a good person with a gun is a good thing to have. They can defend life. The difference between it is just a tool, and so are these offices, just like a gun. The difference is the man who wields the power. And a further blog post, the coach said one of the fundamental parts of all of this, sports, is to learn to play by the rules. The rules supposedly put in place in order to create a fair and level playing field, to let everybody know what is expected and allowed, and then to be the best man, woman, or team to win. Except now we're adding arbitrary, senseless, ill-thought-out rules. Well, the problem is that if you want to make an analogy to sports, what is going on is, let's say that you have a set of rules, but then you have some referee officials on site, and they have connections to one of the teams, and they've decided that they don't want to play by those rules. They're going to make up their own rules for this game, because that's what's happening with these state, local officials, and the federal officials. They're making up their own rules. They're not playing by the rules of the Constitution. Many people are realizing now that this is not a real thing, that this is not the deadly pandemic that they've been telling everybody. There was a lot of reason to be suspicious that it was. As I've said many times, even I was concerned about that. Because even though I had seen what these people had done, I've also reported on their gain-of-function experiments and how reckless, not just unethical and illegal, but how reckless technologically that is. And so, you know, you look at this and it's like, well, this could be the time this happens. But I also said, whatever the condition, if we approach it from the standpoint of a top-down tyranny to lock us down, we will have a big fight on our hands to ever get these freedoms back. And here we are over a year later, 394 days. And guess what? They're not letting go of that power that they took. If we have a plague that comes through, we just had homeschool co-op here. There was a virus that was going around, a real virus this time, stomach virus, making people very sick for a couple of days. And so they took it upon themselves last week to decide that they're just not going to meet. My wife still does some volunteer work for them, even though all of our kids are finished. They just decided that they weren't going to meet, and that was a rational decision. We're capable of making those kinds of rational decisions ourselves when we see the effect in the community. This is being imposed on us from the top down because we don't see the effect, because there is no effect, because this is blatant malpractice being incentivized by the government with massive amounts of money. The stories I see of people who are, and individuals that I know, who are genuinely sick, thrown out of the hospital because they want to keep those beds open for COVID patients. Are these people any sicker than somebody who has had a massive stroke or is suffering from cancer? No, no. But they get more money if they put those kinds of people in the beds. So when we look at this, that is exactly the analogy that is happening. I'll talk a little bit about, let's talk about it now, the ransomware aspect. Think about ransomware. Hopefully you've not had any direct experience with this, but the way that it works is it's malware that typically piggybacks on some kind of an email or document that you trust or that you're curious about. And so you click on it, and it releases a virus that locks up, encrypts your computer, and then tells you, the people will contact you and say, need to send us this amount of money. And if you do, we promise that we'll unlock your computer. This is exactly what has happened to us. The other analogy is, a lot of times you send them the money, and they don't unlock your computer. They just take the money. And what have we had? How is this whole thing like ransomware? Well, it was from the very beginning. It was always about the vaccine. Lock us down. And the only thing they're going to accept, just like these cyber criminals, they have one thing that they will accept, and that's the vaccine. They're going to demonize, make it illegal, threaten doctors, threaten pharmacists, even stockpile it to get it off the market. If you take an over-the-counter, well, it's not over-the-counter, it's still a prescription drug, but the effects were very well known. People had used it for chronic conditions, hydroxychloroquine, even ivermectin. People used it for chronic conditions, meaning they use it all their life because these are conditions that don't go away. They're chronic. They're not cured by the medication. The medication helps relieve some of the symptoms, and so people use them for a very long time, and they've been using them for many decades. These things go back to the middle of the 20th century. So the risks are very well understood. They're relatively safe as pharmaceuticals go, approved by the FDA for other uses, but not for this. And the biggest factor is that they are inexpensive and that they're not a vaccine, because the whole point of this was the vaccine passport. And so it should have raised everybody's concerns that no therapeutics were allowed, that doctors were attacked, canceled, some cases fired because they talked about therapies. And that's much worse than YouTube shutting down DeSantis talking about masks on children. No. We're going to purge any medical information that could cure people of this, effectively treat them safely, cheaply, and effectively. And so here we are. How did we get to this point? Well, you had people who were Republicans who trusted the Trojan horse, Trump, and you had the Democrats trust the Trojan horse, Fauci, the statists. These Trojan horses were the ones that piggybacked this virus on us, this virus of tyranny. That's the virus. That's the pandemic that is everywhere. It's an epidemic of tyranny, and it is in every country. We have a pandemic of draconian tyranny, and they modeled this for decades. And so that's where we are right now. And let me tell you, we're already seeing evidence of the fact that even if you get the vaccine passport, even if you pay these blackmailers off, even if you sign their Faucian bargain, they're still not going to let you free. They're openly saying, well, even if you've had both of your shots, you're still going to have to social distance. You're still going to have to mask. Maybe you'll get double shots and double masks as well, as the absurdity piles on. The only science, as I've said, is behavioral science involved in this pandemic. And now they are trying to lock this down with a fashion statement, the masks. You have the electronics company Razer, and they've announced Project Hazel, a new smart mask. It is in their upcoming line of surgical-grade smart masks, which are now becoming a hip fashion accessory. They have ventilators to regulate your airflow. Well, wait a minute. How does that work then? You're going to open up the airflow? Well, then it's not really like a double mask, right? It has an auto-sterilizing charging case. And the masks come with a built-in microphone and amplifier system, as well as personalized lighting accents. That's the fashion statement aspect of it. But, of course, having a built-in microphone and amplifier, because otherwise you're mumbling all the time, right? It's like everybody is mumbling at everybody else. It's like trying to communicate with people anymore is like driving through at a fast food restaurant where the speakers are garbling everything that you say, the speakers on the mics. And so this is not the only effort. You have Davos pushing out and promoting another one of these, another Chinese smart face mask. And the difference with this one is it does seem to be a little bit more functional, because it monitors the buildup in carbon dioxide, as well as a lack of oxygen, and tells you to pull the thing down so you can breathe for a second. Because, see, that's the whole thing with this coach. You're putting these masks on kids, depriving them of oxygen, increasing their carbon dioxide at the time that they're exercising, and their body and their brain at a very developmental age needs to have that. This is a deliberate, insidious plan to make people sick, to harm people. And when we talk about these masks, so many people, we've had studies this last summer. Duke and others did studies saying you put the mask on, what it does is it still shoots it out the sides, but it shoots it out with more force and with smaller particles. And so they go further, and they stay airborne longer. Back in 2002, an Australian study said even the N95 masks, even if they are sealed around your face, They only last for 20, work for 20 minutes. At that point, the mask is saturated with moisture. As you're speaking, you're constantly putting out a little bit of spit all the time. And so the mask becomes saturated, and now the air pressure, as it's hitting the front of that mask, saturated with moisture, again, it pushes out the particles. Greater force, smaller particles, travel farther, airborne longer. It's counterproductive. But what it's doing to our children, you can see it in the acne on people's face. You can see what is happening in terms of bacteria, but it's also, even if the mask is kept clean, you're depriving people of oxygen and increasing carbon dioxide. That is an insidious plan to harm people, just as the vaccines are, these untested vaccines. As RT reports, the Davos set's dystopian ambitions are very clear, keeping us masked forever. The World Economic Forum, Davos, is now promoting a Chinese smart face mask that tracks every breath. It's where it takes. Every breath you take, every move you make, I'll be watching you. Remember the police? Yeah, prophetic, wasn't it? It's only for when you pop into Tesco's to do your weekly shop. What's your problem with that, you selfish right-wing libertarian? Look at me, I'm such a good citizen, as people virtue signal about that. Well, in this context, the World Economic Forum's enthusiastic promotion of the Chinese smart face mask needs to be seen. It is apparently reminds users when to wash it and checks to see if they're wearing it properly. And if too much carbon dioxide builds up inside, a phone alert. Oh, it reminds you on your phone. Because you always need to keep that identity tracker. You need to have Big Brother on you at all times. Reminds the wearer to catch a few breaths of fresh air. If the user forgets to put it on, the same phone app sends them a reminder to mask up. Even Orwell could not imagine anything this pervasive, this insidious. Even Orwell, even Huxley, didn't imagine a dystopian society where the tyrants would demand that we wear masks over our faces so that we can't breathe. And then have little electronic devices that would nag us about it. That only comes from the Chinese and from the Davos globalists. The masks are the future, says the World Economic Forum. And that is what they are touting. To track every breath that you take. All right, we're going to get into some of the vaccine passports, more about America held hostage. But I want to talk a little bit about headline news here. Because it's kind of interesting, as we talk about all of this, everything that is happening to remake society is fundamentally about Marxism. And so let me just introduce this with this story about the founder of Black Lives Matter. Well, we're moving on now. There we go, yeah. Boy, that's my old Mustang. Yep, that's right. Black mansions matter, don't they? You know, the thing about the Jeffersons was George Jefferson actually earned that. Right? He's moving on up. This, however, is a Marxist, Patricia Cullors. I like what New American called it, the Cullors of Money. She's just a Marxist. She likes Marxism for you. I said she's content, however, to enjoy the fruits of capitalism. No, actually, she's not enjoying the fruits of capitalism. That was George Jefferson, a small businessman who was enjoying that. No, she is enjoying the fruits of political corruption, of a power game. She just bought a deluxe apartment in the sky. $3.2 million. Yeah, this is the headline from New York Post, Black Lives Manners. You could call it Black Lies Manners because that's how she got it, with some lies. But it's strictly the same historical game that we've seen with the Marxists always. History doesn't repeat itself exactly, but it does rhyme. We always see these people who use warfare, class warfare. Here, it's not economic. Here, they decided, going back to people like Bill Ayers, and the weather underground. They said, well, this really isn't working for us like it did in Europe. In Europe, we had a very stratified society economically. People don't see themselves that way here. People see themselves, even black people, see the opportunity to move on up, right? Start a business, work hard, you can move on up. So that's not working here. We've got to find another way to divide people. I know. We'll use race. So they started talking about white skin privilege, which now they just have shortened to white privilege. Bill Ayers stopped bombing buildings as a left-wing anarchist, and he started bombing the minds of kids hanging out in the educational establishment in and around Chicago, buddies with Barack Obama. But we always see these Marxists talking about envy and warfare between different economic classes, different racial groups, so that they can divide and conquer, so that they can grab the money. Just take a look at what's going on in Venezuela. Look at the rich kids of these Marxists in Europe, because they're bragging about it on Instagram and other places, how much money they're blowing on stuff. They are the elites. They get everybody fighting amongst themselves. They take the cream of the crop, and that's exactly what Patricia Cullors has done, the so-called activist. Eyed properties also in the Bahamas, an ultra-exclusive resort where Justin Timberlake and Tiger Woods both have homes, said the Washington Post. They said luxury apartments and townhomes in the beachfront Albany resort outside of Nassau are priced between $5 million and $20 million, according to the local agent. So this is how these people feather their nests by setting us against each other. Yeah, Patrice Cullors. Self-professed Marxists, very much like Bernie Sanders. How is it that Bernie Sanders, who was, as the Soviet Union was collapsing under its own despotism, he goes there for his honeymoon, celebrating it, but of course now he's got his own million-dollar mansion. Now, this is the way these Marxists operate. Sports journalist Jason Whitlock, who is himself black, sarcastically called out Cullors for her blatant hypocrisy. Black Lives Matter founder buys $1.4 million home in Topanga, which has a black population of 1.4%. But she's with her people, he tweeted out on Friday. But it's not just going to be that. It's not going to be just the Marxist agitators like Bernie Sanders and Patrice Cullors and her co-founder, both of them Marxists. It's not going to just be that. The left is going to be using reparations and all sorts of things. Could the tax code be used to make U.S. reparations? Because, see, they want you to think that to divide and conquer you, to fight each other over who gets a tax deduction. And now the tax deductions are going to be based on skin color. That's what they're advocating. They want us to fight each other over that and not fight these people who are taxing us. As I've said many times, if they're going to spend more than $1 trillion a month, which is the clip that we're going at right now, if they're going to go into debt more than $1 trillion a month, every month, Biden has been coming out with a $2 trillion or more proposal. And so he's accelerated it. We had under Trump, in about 9 months of this lockdown insanity, we had about $6 trillion. But Biden is accelerating this, and it will accelerate. So as they continue to do this, and they have absolutely no way that we're going to pay this back, I've reported many times, in 2019, January of 2019, the press was wringing its hands, saying we're on course to have a $900 billion deficit this year. That's 0.9 trillion. And now we're doing $1 to $2 trillion every month, not just under $1 trillion for the year. And it's not simply the partisan politics of opposing Trump. That was a big deficit compared to Obama. It was something that we should have been concerned about. But if they're going to completely ignore what the deficit is, then why are we worried about taxes? They'll never be able to tax us enough to pay this back. That's not the way they're going to get out of this. They're going to get out of this by completely destroying the currency. So why are they worried about taxing us? And it's not about fiscal responsibility. It's not about balancing the books. You ain't ever going to balance these books. You're going to just come in and have a house fire where all the books disappear. That's the way they're going to get rid of this stuff. No, they're worried about taxing us because they can't allow us to have any discretionary income whatsoever. We are non-essential. They're going to destroy the middle class. They're going to destroy hundreds of thousands of businesses, already have. They're going to do more. And the jobs associated with those. And they're going to put us on a handout. And then they're going to come back and tax that handout or do whatever they can. But they're intent on removing our wealth, intent on removing our discretionary income. And so that's why they're fighting over and talking about continually raising taxes. There's no way they're going to ever balance these books. But they also want to use the tax code now as a weapon of their race war because they're Marxists. And because they always want people to prefer equality and slavery with this divide and conquer. The other part of this is always to make people think that the other guy is going to pay the taxes. Yeah, I know we're spending all this money and I want a piece of that pie. But and it'll have to be paid back somewhere, but it's going to be paid back by the rich people. It's going to be paid back by those other people. Yeah, that's true Marxism. What Patrice Cullors is doing is class warfare, and so is this. The governor of Vermont, Phil Scott, a Republican, attracted attention when he announced, if you or anyone in your household identifies as black, indigenous, or a person of color, and they have an alphabet acronym for that, just like LGBT, they have a BIPOC, BIPOC. If you're a BIPOC, I'm a biped. Does that matter? I walk on two legs. If you fit that, including anyone with Abenaki or other First Nations heritage, all household members who are 16 years or older can now sign up to get a vaccine. Lucky you. But of course, this is a privilege that he sees being granted. And this is being done by a Republican governor. A Republican governor. Yet, as the New York Sun points out, yet line leapfrogging may just be a warm-up act for a longer-term issue to ponder as this year's annual income tax filing deadline approaches. They've now extended it, by the way, to May the 17th. You probably know that. Prediction: by the tax year 2024, Americans will be asked to indicate their race on Form 1040, tweeted Scott Greenberg, former analyst to the Tax Foundation. And in this article from the Sun, New York Sun, they talk about a recent interview. This is an interview about a book called The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and How We Can Fix It. That's right. We need to have more taxes to fix this. They want you to prefer equality and slavery rather than saying, do we even really need a tax system when you're spending $2 trillion a month? So, a law professor at Emory, Mrs. Brown, is the author, and in the interview, Ms. Brown says, the IRS doesn't collect or publish statistics by race. The interviewer stopped her and says, that to me, when I read it, was mind-boggling. I need you to say that again. So the author repeated the point. The IRS does not collect or publish statistics by race. And so they said, well, this has got to be the first step. We've got to correct that. Why? This is about collecting income taxes. No, no, no. This is, if they've got to correct that, it is to use this to close the gap. So Brown's book suggests, quote, a reparations credit is the final piece of closing the black-white wealth gap. The reasoning is simple. The overtly racist policies of the past aren't truly behind us. That's right. The worst racism is ahead of us. And let me tell you, when you start doing that, that's going to... eventually, people are going to have enough of this kind of game. But the sad thing is that they're most likely going to blame black people for this instead of the white liberals who put this in, the white Marxist liberals. Another example of these Marxists at work, carbon credits. Because as I said many times, this Green New Deal is like a watermelon. It's got a thin veneer of green on the outside, and it is totally red on the inside. Red as in Marxist, communist, not how they got us to all start calling ourselves red states and wearing red colors as Republicans. Now, that was a masterstroke, wasn't it? They have, this is an investigation by Bloomberg, saying that the Nature Conservancy, the world's biggest environmental group, and a prominent seller of carbon offsets, has been selling worthless credits to J.P. Morgan, to Disney, and to BlackRock. And what they're doing is they're selling them credits to finance the protection of carbon-absorbing forest land. Forest land. To absolve them of their sins. Yeah, this is like indulgences. Remember the Middle Age indulgences that helped to create the Protestant Reformation, revolt? You know, you would pay in advance for the permission to sin. Well, that's exactly what the carbon credits are. They are green indulgences because it is a religion, but it is also fraudulent, just like everything else in Marxism. The carbon credits and the so-called green bonds are some of the most popular ESG-focused products. And the reason that this is fraudulent, as Bloomberg Green, Bloomberg Press, they have a separate division of the Bloomberg, quote-unquote, news organization. It's a propaganda. But the Bloomberg so-called news has Bloomberg Green. And so they focus on all things green, you know, the color of money. They did an investigation last year. They found the world's largest environmental group, the Nature Conservancy, is taking credit for preserving trees and no danger of destruction. This is like Barack Obama talking about the jobs saved. Trying to pretend that he had created any jobs. He says, well, these are jobs that would have normally gone if I hadn't come in here with some miraculous interventions from the state. Trump did the same thing when he latched on to Fauci's bogus predictions from the Imperial College saying 2.2 million people were going to die last March. And then he said, when the number was 200,000 that Fauci was pushing, that I saved 2 million as he was running for presidency. He's bragging about the... So, yeah, this is lives saved by Trump's lockdown, jobs saved by Obama's economic policies, and trees saved that were also in no danger of destruction. Selling credits for well-protected trees potentially undermines the sustainability efforts of some of the world's biggest companies, said Bloomberg as they were wringing their hands. And as we move towards a digital currency, and as China has put out its, really gone further into having a central bank digital currency than any other country, they're now reporting that the Chinese digital yuan comes with an expiration date. Use this by such and such a date, or it expires. Which is not all that novel, actually, because our Federal Reserve notes also come with an expiration date. It's just not printed on there. They inflate away the value. And we're going to be looking, to me, this is another harbinger of hyperinflation that is coming. Don't hang on to this. There'll be economic reasons not to hang on to your currency at all. You want to immediately put it into something that is tangible that you can then barter, because this is what's coming to all the currencies, an expiration date. And that's typically done with inflation. We have lost over 99% of the value of the dollar since the Federal Reserve was imposed back in 1913. And so it has an expiration date on it. 99% of it is gone. And it's accelerated recently, and it's going to really accelerate once we go into hyperinflation because of this deficit. And tax increases or redistributing money between different groups of people for political advantages isn't going to do anything to stop that. So as the SEC's Hester Pierce says, Bitcoin is here. I think we're past the point very early on because you'd have to shut down the entire internet. I don't see how you could ban it, said the Security and Exchange Commission as they were talking about this. I don't see how you could ban it. You could certainly make the effort. It'd be very hard to stop people from trading Bitcoin. So I think it'd be a foolish thing for the government to try to do that. And we all know that the government would never attempt to do a foolish thing. It would be very authoritarian for the government to do that, wouldn't it? Well, we have Canada is going to censor hurtful comments about politicians and implement an internet kill switch. We had Obama talking about putting in an internet kill switch, effectively, a long time ago. It would be a very foolish thing. It would be a very foolish thing for the government to come around and try to confiscate everybody's guns, but it doesn't mean they won't do it. It would create total anarchy, chaos, perhaps war, to go door-to-door to confiscate guns. That may be the very reason they would do it. Don't ever think that simply because it is makes no sense and because people would be killed that they wouldn't do it. I mean, that's the essence of our foreign policy. Blunt force trauma that has absolutely no ethical or political value except to enrich the people of the military-industrial complex, and they're more than capable of going to war against us. Nothing that has happened in the last 394 days is rational. Why would we expect that they'd be rational about any of this? And so when we look at the efforts to kill, the extraordinary efforts to kill speech, I think that their efforts to corral us in to a centralized digital cashless system that will eventually be global, I think that they'll be using exactly the same types of techniques that they're using right now to take away our free speech. They'll go after individuals. They'll confiscate as we go into their cyberspace and play their game. It makes it very easy for them to have to attack us, as we have seen on social media. And if that's not enough, they'll go after platforms. They'll go after the people who are selling the Bitcoin. And if that's not enough, they can very easily identify anybody who is mining the cryptocurrency. You have to have miners in order to have transactions occur. And so they can easily stop that just by monitoring the power use. Don't think that any kind of authoritarian measure is off the table with these people. I'm confident we can get this adopted, said a Canadian on an Ottawa think tank affiliated with the Liberal Party. He said, once the legislation is adopted, clearly creating a new body, a new regulator like that in Canada would take some time. But he said, we'll have a kill switch to block websites that we deem to be hurtful. I mean, we've already seen this. We saw them do it to Gab. Gab recovered. They started hosting their own stuff and everything, but they did it to Parler. Parler has come back officially, but in reality, that was a very big blow to them. It remains to be seen whether or not they're going to survive that, because so many people in that period of time while they were trying to get back online went elsewhere, went to Gab. And so being able to do this, being able to take away the funding of these companies, they have so many different ways that they can come at you, especially through the economic system. That's why I'm somewhat pessimistic about what is going on with Bitcoin. Nevertheless, you know, we need to try to hedge all bets. Under this plan of going after individual websites and shutting them down because you don't like their speech, under this plan, it'll still be perfectly fine for political apparatchiks to hurl insults and ad hominem attacks on constituents who raise legitimate issues with their members of parliament. But under these impending new regulations against political taunts and even unlicensed internet undertakings, this writer says, this might land me afoul of the new rules. And of course, it'll probably land me afoul of the rules as well. This is a report from Zero Hedge. We're in the early innings of an inexorable transition from the age of nation states into network or crypto states. Crypto populism, will that be what it looks like? How that looks is often the topic of discussion. It can be chilling or it can be liberating, like a decentralized mosaic of crypto states. That's the choice that we have as people, as citizens who can actually participate in right now, today. We need to be thinking about this because these people have been thinking about it for decades, planning and working towards it for decades. Everything that is happening to us has been planned. It was sold to us as protecting the environment, something just like these trees that didn't need protecting. Everything about this Green New Deal head fake didn't need protecting. That's the big story that Bloomberg Green won't tell you. Look at this. They're telling us that they're protecting these forests. What do they call it? The INT fund? You know, we're going to protect. We have trees here that are going to protect other trees. It didn't need protecting. None of this stuff needs protecting. We've had a massive increase in CO2, and it hasn't done anything at all to the temperature. We didn't have the corresponding rise. Their models were wrong. Their data was hidden, just as they have fought to hide this information from us about the pandemic. Don't want it audited. It's impossible to audit. They didn't do autopsies on these people. That they have run the body count up to 500,000 or more now. I don't know what it is. You'd have to watch CNN. If you watch CNN, they keep a running body count. And they've also got a running count of the number of people who've been vaccinated. Because it's fear solution, crisis solution. So as we look at this, we have the government doing everything they can to reorder our society in response to a non-existent problem. But here's another problem. And this is a big deal. This is the CRISPR on, CRISPR off. New game-changing gene editing technique, entirely reversible, they say. They said this is like the stuff of science fiction. It's being funded, by the way, by DARPA. DARPA. That branch of the Pentagon that has devoted itself to making every dystopian novel come to life. Whether it is Terminator, Orwell's 1984, Brave New World from Huxley, every single one of these, they have devoted themselves to things to come. All of these dystopian novels, they have worked to make this come true. And so, supposedly, they say this is much more precise than the CRISPR-Cas9, capable of controlling a gene with laser-like precision, while leaving the broader strand of DNA unchanged. This is what we were told about the last generation of CRISPR gene editing. And let me just debunk that myth. The people who've been doing this on cattle in Texas, their analogy, they said, well, it's not so much like a scalpel, it's more like a chainsaw. And we get a lot of ancillary damage when we do this to try to breed better cattle. And to try to breed connections into them, to take a short circuit. And this is how genetic modification is different from selective breeding. We've had an amazing variety, haven't we, in terms of, let's just say, dogs. They're all dogs. They're all the dog kind. And yet, with selective breeding, we can get everything from Chihuahuas to Irish Wolfhounds and everything in between. We can get fast dogs, we can get heavy dogs, we can get strong dogs, we can get smart dogs, dumb, goofy dogs that we like to keep around in our lap. We can get all kinds of dogs, so we can change their appearance in every way. And that's all done by selective breeding. Genetic engineering, however, is different. That's like combining cats and dogs. It's like, as they would say in Ghostbusters, this is like end-of-the-world stuff, because it is end-of-the-world stuff. These chimeras, what they can do is, since everything in God's creation, God created everything as a very sophisticated code. In the beginning was the Word. And they refer to these DNA codes as Word, but that's not the source of it. There has to be an intelligence. In a sense, the DNA is a record of that creative intelligence, if you will. They spend all this time with SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, trying to discern some kind of a repeating pattern. They thought they had it with quasars. They said, look at this. This is a regular repeating pattern. Then they decided that, so it must be intelligence because it's repetitive. It's not just random signals. And then they decided, well, this is a bipolar electromagnetic thing that is rotating at speed, and that's what is sending out the repetitive signal to it. But they're searching for anything that looks like intelligence in this, and yet the evidence of intelligence is within us and within every living thing, and that includes the plant kingdom. One of the things that they do with genetic modification, not even breeding cats and dogs, this is combining plants with dogs. And they could do that because everything in both the plant and animal kingdom has DNA from the common creator. And so they can mix and match these different things in horrific ways, not knowing what they're doing fully. And I have no confidence in the safety of this whatsoever. But they made, the reason I'm covering this right now is because they made some interesting comparisons to Moderna. We're told that it's a conspiracy theory that these vaccines are modifying our DNA. These people are not saying that. They said, we can do this for multiple genes at the same time without any DNA damage. So it's 100% effective and 100% safe. Yeah, right. The way this works, by the way, this CRISPR-Cas9, this is not, as they would like for you to believe, a nano-sized scalpel or a laser-like precision. This is a carrier, and this is coming from a bacteria that they found at a particular level in some of the geysers in Yellowstone. And they realized that they could piggyback a genetic sequence onto that, and it would cause a edit to occur. And that's what they're doing. They're introducing it that way. And so this is not like you would imagine with Jurassic Park, where they have some super high powerful magnification with a microscope, and that they can go in there and that they're manipulating it as they depict it in Jurassic Park. Now, it's a bit of a hit or miss thing. That's why it is more like a scalpel than not. And it creates unintended consequences, like every technology has unintended consequences. And so they said, CRISPR off is what they're calling this. Finally works as envisioned in science fiction way. It's exciting to see it work so well in practice. Well, it may be better than the other one, but we were told the other one was the gold standard, the CRISPR-Cas9 DNA cutting protein. And so they're going to continue with this stuff. They're going to continue unethically to experiment on humans and animals. But here's the takeaway where they tie this all together. They compared the deliverability potential of CRISPR-off into a human being to the newly developed RNA technology, which forms the basis of both the Moderna and the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine. But their gene editing techniques will have to undergo far more rigorous testing before it can even begin clinical trials in human hosts. Now, that one paragraph tells us a great deal about this whole situation and why you should be skeptical about the vaccines and why it is not a conspiracy theory. I've reported before that Moderna on its own site says that we're messing with the software of life, that your DNA is like a hard drive. And our mRNA is like software that's going to go in and modify the data on that hard drive. And that's exactly what they're doing. But if you say that, well, this is just, you don't know what you're talking about. You're just a crazy conspiracy theorist. That's what Moderna says. And now these people were talking about their wonderful, perfect technology, CRISPR off. Saying, we can turn this on, we can turn it off. On and off, on and off. We morph you into something else, and we morph you back. Yeah, right. This is DARPA, by the way. DARPA, funding autonomous killer robots. Their very first project was to fund autonomous self-driving cars and vehicles. And if you want to know where the nightmare technology is coming from, just look at DARPA. Look at DARPA. So they've funded all of that. DARPA has also been very active in terms of messing with people's minds. They say that they can implant memories and selectively remove memories. And, of course, they do this because they want to help soldiers who have PTSD. Well, don't send them off to unnecessary wars, undeclared and without a purpose. That would help to keep there from being a PTSD problems in the first place. But they're bragging that they can do that. Many people will look at that and say, I don't know. I don't think they can. And that's where our big mistake is, to think that they can't do, that they don't have this kind of technological capability. Most of us underestimate their technological capability, and all of us underestimate their evil and what they are morally capable of doing as well. And so when we look at this, they say, well, it works exactly the same way as Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. However, we're going to have a lot of rigorous testing, unlike the vaccines. Unlike the vaccines. See, the vaccines are doing this kind of CRISPR-like modification. They say, that's what these people say, doing exactly the same thing. But we're going to have to do a little bit more tests before we do this. And we're going to have to do a lot of tests before we even put it on humans. They went straight to the humans with Operation Warp Speed, Trump's Operation Warp Speed. That's why I say it is ransomware. These people are criminals. Trump was a Trojan horse who introduced this virus of tyranny to you to lock you down and to keep you locked down until you pay the ransom. And that ransom is your vaccine passport. And then guess what? They're going to renege on the Faucian bargain. Before we leave the medical stuff, you've seen, I'm sure, and I'm not going to show you the videos of it, the monkey, Neuralink people, the brain implant people. By the way, it was one of these Neuralink CEOs which pointed out last week that I think we could do Jurassic Park. We got the technology to do it. As a matter of fact, let's not just try to recreate dinosaurs. Let's try to create something really novel and combine these different dinosaurs. These are the kind of mad scientists that have access to unlimited amounts of money through DARPA, through the military, industrial, academic complex, which is what Eisenhower called it initially. They have essentially done what Eisenhower warned us. They have now essentially a monopoly on research and technology, and they have completely removed any ethical considerations. So we're in a Joseph Mengele type of situation. But this video that you've seen from Neuralink, the guy who wants to create Jurassic Park, maybe we could have raptors who can use mind control to play video games. I'm sure they'd be content to do that, don't you think? but anyway, this is really about electroceuticals. And it's interesting that in this article, they don't talk about electroceuticals. Elon Musk doesn't talk about electroceuticals either. But you know who does talk about electroceuticals a lot? A lot? Fauci, his boss, Francis Collins, and the usual suspects like Moncef Slaoui. If you go back and look for these guys in the past few years, what they really focused on is electroceuticals. And I've not seen the press use this once. Kind of like that term geospatial intelligence to track and monitor everything that we do. They don't like to use those terms for some reason. I guess because they use these as these are frequently referenced in their presentations and their seminars and so forth, and they don't really want us looking at their research, but you should look at their research and what they're planning to do, because electroceuticals is the next thing beyond vaccines. They're able to do a lot of things to us biologically with electrical impulses, because that affects our nervous system. And so for several years, probably the last 10 years, these people have been having one convention after the other, talking about their different electroceutical manipulations, how they're going to treat particular diseases or control people. This is just one crude demonstration of it. The only time I've seen them use the term electroceuticals was about 2 weeks ago, when Moncef Slaoui was kicked out for sexual harassment. Moncef Slaoui, he was head of GlaxoSmithKline's vaccine division there for quite a while before, and he worked for GlaxoSmithKline for a very long time. He developed one of the HPV vaccines, not Gardasil, but another one for GlaxoSmithKline. And in the H1N1 swine flu fake pandemic, and it was a fake pandemic. Within a year, it was gone because they didn't lock everybody down. Only 25% of the people took the vaccine that they rushed at warp speed to market. They did it in just a couple of months. They didn't test anything. And within a year, you started having problems show up with kids, very well documented in Scandinavian countries. These vaccines are far worse. We're going to talk about that now. You didn't have, even with Pandemrix, which is the H1N1 vaccine, even with that, you didn't have people immediately having adverse effects by the tens of thousands, thousands of people dying right away. That didn't happen with pandemics. It took a year for that to show up. But that was Moncef Slaoui developing it at GlaxoSmithKline with assistance from Fauci. They were not happy because they only got 25% of the people to take the vaccine before their excuse disappeared. And so they said, we got to think of how we're going to do this better. And they did. That was 10 years ago when they did that. But Moncef Slaoui then was brought in by Fauci to push the Moderna vaccine because he left GlaxoSmithKline, went to Moderna working on mRNA. And after he was czar for a year, he left and went back to a subsidiary of GlaxoSmithKline. This subsidiary was focused on electroceuticals. And they only mentioned that because somebody at the subsidiary accused Moncef Slaoui of sexual harassment, and they fired him. And they talked about how these were electroceuticals, and they were being financed by the government, dark projects, and so forth. That's really what you need to worry about. More so than the swamp, it's the dark science that these people are involved in. And you need to be concerned about electroceuticals because that is the next step. CIA, for the longest time, with all of their clumsy chemical mind control and other things like that, the MK Ultra program, their LSD programs, they were trying to do it via LSD. They got into the occult. They've tried everything, but the thing that's working for them is the electrical approach. What is being modeled for us by Neuralink, by Elon Musk, and these other people. That's where the technocracy is going, and that's why you should be very concerned. As a matter of fact, some of the people have put out, and I had a listener send it to me, I'll just mention it briefly, talking about how they believe that pandemics were a function of electromagnetic radiation increase. We're about to see that go up exponentially. You should be concerned about that. You should be concerned about Elon Musk being given the permission to launch tens of thousands of satellites to blanket the Earth in very high-frequency radiation, 5G radiation, and then generations after 5G, they will continue to go up in terms of frequency and to blanket the Earth with that. You should be concerned about it. I'm not willing to say that that is the sole cause of all diseases, as other people will say, but there's absolutely clearly a connection between creating biological problems. This is one of the reasons why they didn't really want to talk about what was going on with the embassy attacks in Cuba and in China, because that was clearly the Fry effect, very well documented, that you can cause people to hear clicks if you expose them to certain frequencies. Different frequencies have different effects. You can hit people with electromagnetic radiation like radar. That can cause a heating. Okay, you can cook people. You can kill people that way, just like you can kill just like you can cook your food in a radar range, the amount of radar ranges. So you can microwave meat like us. You can do various other things, and we don't really know what the biological effects are going to be on this, but we do know that it's very unnatural, it's very potentially dangerous, and it's another one of these experiments for which they do not want to take the time to see what is happening there, because that would get in the way of what they want to do to us. All right, we're going to come back in just a second. We're going to talk about the vaccine passports. This is ramping up in a very troubling way. We're going to talk also about how religious leaders are working to deceive their own flock. Unbelievable what is happening. We also have updates on what is going on in Ukraine and Russia, as well as gun control. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Welcome back, and if you would like to support us, if you'd like to send me information, I've got some letters here that I think are very interesting from some of our listeners. But if you'd like to send information to me about what you see, news tips about what you see, davidknightshow@protonmail.com. davidknightshow@protonmail.com. And, of course, you can also send money via PayPal to that address as well, davidknightshow@protonmail.com. Take a look at the links that we have at The David Knight Show. That'll show you, if you want to support us, the links to Venmo, to Cash App. And be careful, because we had somebody who tried to send us cash and they used the wrong email address. So we have those links at thedavidknightshow.com. Venmo, Bitcoin, Cash App, and a P.O. Box, all those things are there, as well as where you can find us at all the different podcasts, the live stream at Trovo and DLive, links to all of that, as well as links to where we put up the video content at the end of the day. We try to cut out some shorter clips, try to get things anywhere from 2 minutes to 20 minutes, depending on the topic. And then we have the full show that's up as well. And on the full show, we try to put in the, we get it almost every day, we have the topics by time code, so, because we know 3 hours is a long time. And so you can look at the time code and you can jump to the sections that you're interested in. And I'll just give a quick shout out to the people who are following us, the David Knight Show. I recorded a podcast entry, a short one, and I put it out on the David Knight Show, because we have the real David Knight Show. That we had to create, because we couldn't get the podcast that was just the David Knight Show turned over to us. But we had to do that with BitChute as well. So I need to do an announcement and put it on BitChute, because I had somebody say, why aren't you uploading stuff on BitChute anymore? Well, for the first week or so, we thought we were going to be able to get BitChute back, but it wasn't turned over to us. So we created a new channel, called it Roundtable Report on BitChute, and we were uploading videos there. And then we were able to get that turned over to us for BitChute. And so then we started, because we already had a large subscriber base on BitChute, we started uploading our content there instead of trying to build up from scratch the Roundtable Report. So I need to put something on the Roundtable Report to tell people. We are still putting stuff up, and have been since about, you know, on the David Knight Show at BitChute, since about 10 days or so in, 2 weeks in. And the same thing is true since January the 12th, because we could not get the podcast that was under my name turned over to us for 3 months. We had to fight with them to do that. They were still putting up content, but it wasn't my content. It was just under my name. And so we were able to get that turned over. And so that's what I was telling everybody on the David Knight Show podcast, because we started getting all these people sending us stuff. So glad you're back on the air. And it's like, well, we've been on the air since December the 21st, the Monday after the Thursday I was fired. And so we only missed one day, but it's been in various forms, and it's been trying to get this back underneath our name. And so that's why I put up, for those of you who didn't hear that short blurb that I put up for the David Knight Show, I've got the story there of what happened for the people who think that we disappeared. That seems to have been what the plan was. But fortunately, we're back. We had a friend on the inside, shall I put it, who no longer works for them, was instrumental in getting the stuff with my name on it turned back to us. So now we have the real David Knight Show and the David Knight Show. Both of those are podcasts. One of them is coming from Spreaker. The other one is coming from Podbean. And they're going out all the different podcast sources. So you can find them on the various podcast platforms. But it comes out from those 2 points. I have a letter from Joseph that I think is very interesting. It kind of hinges on what is happening with the lockdown. But there's another point involved here that's very key about education. Joseph says, I'm a long-time listener, current Subscribestar supporter, in his late 20s from Westchester, New York, listens to your broadcast daily, and goes on to say it's sad because he says, I find myself progressively being more alienated to my peers who are falling in line with all this stuff. And that's where the struggle is. That's why they're coming so hard to censor what's being said. They want one narrative going out. And as YouTube said, we're going to remove any content that doesn't agree with the authorities. How dangerous is that? Well, that's as dangerous as can be. They're going to push out their narrative, and anybody that disagrees with them, they're going to purge that. That is Soviet style. That is tyranny. That is the essence of tyranny. That is why free speech and freedom of religion were the very first prohibitions against government to come after our God-given rights, because that's the way tyranny always operates. And that's where they're going first, isn't it? And where they've made the most progress. Anyway, he goes on to say, back in the fall of 2020, I started work as a building substitute teacher for a public elementary school. At the beginning of the year, the school year, it was the only school in the district to have class almost entirely in person. In order to manage this amidst lockdown conditions and pervading fears about COVID-19, the administration devised a unique model to moderate the number of students in the classroom at any given time. Each class would be separated into two groups. One group would meet in the morning, the other group would meet in the afternoon. In addition to this, students were given extension activities and work to complete remotely to make up for the reduced time spent learning in the classroom. So they're doing a half a day. From September until now, we have proceeded somewhat smoothly under this unconventional school day structure. Evidently, students not only caught up to where they had fallen behind when schools shut down a year ago, but they excelled under this new model, having exceeded their academic benchmarks. Unfortunately, due to an enclave of vocal parents and perhaps an administration eager to be leading an example of reopening successfully, a push was made to bring back full days with all students in attendance together. And as of this week, much to the dismay of the teachers and faculty at large, we have resumed class as such. He said, we could talk at length about the insanity, moreover the injustice of all this lockdown, but the reason I bring this up, and pay attention, this is very important, is that you've often spoken about how an unintended consequence of the measures implemented over the coronavirus is that they have, to some degree, allowed us to become more cognizant of how we can live differently and the things that we can do without. And it occurs to me that the half-day model my school operated by until now inadvertently serves as a case study which ultimately debunks the 7-hour school day. Remember, so they could keep social distancing and everything. They had some students come in for half a day in the morning, others came in for half a day in the afternoon, but they had a very, very short day. As a matter of fact, he gave the times that they met. It was from 8:30 to 11, and in the afternoon it was from 12:30 to 3. So, you know, they're meeting 1.5-2 hours is all that they're meeting. And yet, they're able to catch up and even do better. Why is that? And let me just interject here. This is something that every homeschooling family knows, that you don't have to do a 7 or 8 hour day. As a matter of fact, if you try to do that, you're beating your head against the wall. It's counterproductive, and it's counterproductive in schools. And yet we have seen exactly the opposite trend over the years. We've had them pushing for longer and longer school days and more school days per year, per academic year. That was supposed to be the thing, right? That's how we're going to have students performing better. Longer days and more days every year. And then to radically punish anybody who did not show up for all of these days. I've spoken before about how in the 90s, we had a guy who was genuinely sick. He was the salutatorian at his high school. He worked for us at a video store. And he nearly was flunked mandatory flying, because they had a mandatory attendance. If you missed more than X number of days, you're going to be mandatorily flunked. And they almost did that to him. He came within a day of that, and they were not going to flex on that policy whatsoever. But see, homeschooling families have known that they can get everything that they need to do done in about a half a day. And then the kids are free to explore their own interests and have the time to themselves. And that is actually more productive than browbeating them into a locked-in situation until Eutychus falls out the window, if you know what I mean. Anyway, you can bore people to death, and I hope I'm not doing that to you. Accepting that this is true, under the half-day model, student performance exceeded or was at the very least equivalent to their academic progress under the conventional full-day structure. Would it not suggest that the extra time spent in the classroom is largely unnecessary? Yes. In fact, speaking with a colleague just yesterday brought to my attention that for some classes, the second half of the school day was mainly spent on recreation and activities that kids could easily be doing at home anyway. I feel there is a hidden conceit here that has gone unnoticed, that even though the students are back, are all back together in school at the same time, there is nevertheless no reason to keep them there for as long as what has been the standard full day. Well, as he mentioned in his letter, there's a lot of pressure put on by parents. We've had school unions and officials and things. This is nothing but babysitting, and you know it. And that's why you want us to come back for a full day. And that's exactly right. It is about babysitting. And that's why you have the longer day. It isn't because it's conducive to education. It's just the opposite. And it is also an opportunity for them to fill up these extra make-work hours with conditioning. Conditioning. Another letter from another listener who is in National Guard in South Portland, Maine. Does 1 weekend a month, traditional. As of right now, the COVID vaccine is optional. About half of the small base has been vaccinated. A lot of those who did get vaccinated only did so thinking that it would be mandatory or that would affect their plans to travel this summer. Anyway, he says, what I'm writing you about is how the military is acting towards the people who don't get the vaccine. Basically, everyone has a good idea. This is overblown, and there is something deeper that's going on here. You know, you can fool some of the people some of the time. Some of the people you can fool all the time for over a year. But you can't fool all the people continuously. That's the problem for these people now, as this is going into 394 days. He says, masks are mandatory, although lots are relaxed about the mask as long as we're socially distanced. But he said, there are people who are tattletales. And they're also saying these same people are now going so far as talking to our colonel and saying there needs to be a reward for those who choose to get vaccinated so they can return to normalcy. Now leadership is seriously planning on only allowing fully vaccinated people to eat in our little dining facility since there won't be much mask wearing and people will be sitting closely during lunch. The problem is that for the last year, they've been taking the masks off while they eat in this dining facility and nobody's died. But now we got to increase this. Why? Why? There is no increase in this that's necessary. None whatsoever. But we got, you know, the things that we've been doing for the last year, and we're all still alive, that's not good enough. We've got to go further. And this is the obsessive compulsive dystopian psychological fear that they're working on people. It's progressive. Because those that choose not to get vaccinated will not be allowed to eat lunch with fellow airmen. I'm a former infantryman from the Army, and I must say physical fitness is not taken as seriously in the Air Force as it is in the Army. I'm not bashing the Air Force, but I'm just pointing out one key difference. Well, I've heard that before. I've had a lot of friends who are ex-Marines, and they would call the Air Force a chair force. But now the Marines don't have anything to talk about because now they're making maternity dresses for Marines. So there you go. This is the path that we're all on. Finally, a letter from Celeste saying that they're trying to buy an Aussie dog, Australian sheepdog, Great dogs. We have a border collie. Highly recommend either of those breeds. And from what people said, the Aussies are a little bit easier to deal with than the border collies, who are pretty active at their early age. We're over that stage now. He's about 7 years old, so he's mellowed down. He's really smart. But anyway, they're trying to get an Aussie, he said, while they're trying to get this from the breeder took a COVID vaccine and is now giving updates to everybody on how sick they are. Hi, thank you to all of you who got back to me. I did not get my puppy pics done today because I spent my day in urgent care with another flare-up from this COVID vaccine. I'm now on a couple of prescriptions, and hopefully tomorrow will be better for me. I'll get them done tomorrow or Tuesday, and then I'll start placing pictures. This person says, well, I hope tomorrow will be better for her. And this is the thing that we should all be concerned about. We have never, ever seen this kind of reaction before from vaccines, as I pointed out last week. And I have somebody who ran the numbers in another way, and I'll give that for you, comparing what has happened in the last decade, actually the last 11 years, to what has happened in the last 3 months. We have never had a more deadly, more well-documented reaction to a wide variety of untested vaccines than we have right now. And yet, the answer to all of this is just full speed ahead. Full speed ahead. Because, folks, it was this pandemic was nothing other than ransomware. Ransomware. You trusted those Trojan horses, and now your whole system is locked down like a ransomware attack. You get that vaccine pass, and we promise you, same people who did this to you, you can trust them, of course, right? These same people who did this to you are now telling you that they'll let you go. And it is spreading. As MSN.com says, vaccine requirements are spreading in the U.S., sowing concern about overreach. That's right, because now you've got all these different universities. Brown and Rutgers and Notre Dame, all these big-name universities, a lot of them Ivy League. Matter of fact, I think we probably should call this now the Ivy League. They're demanding that you get the injection intravenously. Call them the intravenous league, the Ivy League. Some sports teams are demanding proof of vaccination before they'll let you get into their arenas. Want to see your favorite band play indoors? Well, at a bigger venue in California, you'll have the same rules apply. A Houston hospital chain recently ordered its 26,000 employees get vaccinated. But of course, as they point out in this MSN article, the Biden administration is leaving the issue to the private sector. This is exactly what I said Trump would do. I said, they're pushing us into this vaccination passport thing, and all the Trump cult would say, oh, he's not going to do that. He'll not mandate this from the federal government. I said, nobody wants to mandate this from the federal government. The New England Journal of Medicine was saying before this even started. They were talking about how everybody needed to be vaccinated. But let's not do this by legislation. Let's let it run through the corporation so people can't fight it. That was the plan with the Trump administration. That is still the plan with the Biden administration. They will do everything they can to incentivize it. They will do everything they can to provide the technology that the companies want to use, but then they'll say, it's not me, it's them that's doing it. We've already seen this with the censorship on the internet. Oh, it's not the government that's shutting it down. It's just, you know, these political interests are using the corporations to shut down the digital public square. And they're shutting down the physical public square to anybody that doesn't get their vaccine. But it's not the Biden administration. They're going to leave the issue to the private sector. And so then MSN wrings its hands, saying, this is the same haphazard pattern that's characterized so much of the pandemic response. When anybody argues for centralized control of something for which there is no constitutional authority, they always talk about a patchwork quilt of regulations. We saw this with the DARK Act, so-called, because they tried to hide everything. But we had a lot of communities saying, we don't like the glyphosate that's being used, the Roundup. You know, it is drifting. It got to be really bad when they created the next generation of pesticides, dicamba. The dicamba drift, people who wanted to use this genetic modified scheme that Monsanto had come up with, and now Monsanto has been sold to Bayer. But the idea behind these pesticides were that it would kill everything. But they're genetically modified seeds that they would also sell you. So they'd sell you the poison, and then they would sell you the only thing that would grow after it was poisoned. And then you had communities that understood what was going on with this, who did not want to be turned into renters from Monsanto or Bayer, whoever has this. And so they pushed back against it. They banned it in certain areas because it was drifting onto neighboring farms and destroying their crops, poisoning their land, and nothing would grow on their land except for the Monsanto genetically modified seeds. And then there would also be drift from the seeds, and the Monsanto would go around and would do genetic tests on the seeds that were growing on neighboring farms. And if some of their stuff had drifted over during the broadcast portion of that and was growing on somebody else's yard, they would sue them for growing their patented seeds on their property. So they had enough of this. And so in the farming communities, they were shutting this down. So the response of the chemical agricultural industry was to go to Washington and to say, we don't want a patchwork quilt of regulation. We want you to do this from Washington, which is what the argument that's being made from MSN about. We don't want a patchwork quilt of vaccine passports. We got to do this centrally. And then they go in and talk about those evil Republicans who are not doing it. But in a way, what they're doing is they're covering for these head fake Republicans like Greg Abbott, Hey Abbott, and Brad Little in Idaho. These people who have gone in and said, we're going to ban vaccination requirement for people who are seeking government services. Government services. So government contractors. So they said, we're not going to mandate it, unlike New York. We're not going to put a state mandate out there. And furthermore, we're not going to allow any governmental organizations or anybody who contracts with the government to do this. However, they're really doing the same thing that Biden is doing. As Jen Psaki, his press secretary, said, well, we're going to leave this up to the private individuals. And that's exactly what Abbott and Little are going to do. It's exactly what they've done with the mask regulations. Leave it up to the people that they've scared to death and leave them with liability in case they don't do it. The only one who's done it right as far as the mask stuff goes is DeSantis. He did it right with the masks. He did it right with the vaccine passports. He says, not only are we not going to put this out, we're not going to allow private businesses to require this either, and we're going to give the private businesses liability so they don't feel like they need to do that. What Abbott and Little are doing is a head fake. What MSN is doing is a head fake, telling you that they're doing this. Brad Little said, vaccine passports create different classes of citizens. That's right, Brad Little, so do something about it. But of course, this is the same Republican governor who, as the Republican legislature was going to take away some of his executive unending tyranny, told them they couldn't meet. And then he wrote some legislation, pulled them back into session, and said, we're going to give liability protection to businesses, but only if they do everything that Fauci says. Completely opposite of what DeSantis did in Florida. Very clear to understand the differences here. Very clear to understand how some of these Republican governors have betrayed us, even worse than the Democrats. Because with Democrats, everybody knows what Cuomo's doing, right? We all know what the Excelsior thing is about. But Brad Little and Greg Abbott are being sold to you as somebody who's standing for your freedom, and they're doing exactly the opposite. They're taking the Biden approach. And this is the same approach that would have been done with Trump as well. We're going to leave it up to the private companies to impose these vaccine passports. A recent survey by the consulting firm Mercer Total Health Management found that 73% of employers do not plan to make vaccinations a requirement. That's good news, but that's good news that isn't necessarily going to last. If 75% of the employers now do not want to have vaccine passports, that doesn't mean that they can't pressure them. And that's what we're going to see, I think. Washington-based information privacy expert, Alexander Howard, not Hamilton, but Howard, good guy, for the Digital Democracy Project, says that phone apps will lead to personal information landing in government and private databases via stadium entrances, airport boarding gates, and anywhere where the devices are swiped. That's the whole point and has been from the very beginning. They've been working towards this since the mid-90s. And when the bandwidth made the internet practical for this, that's when they exploded. When the CIA came out of the closet with their venture capital fund in Qtel, when they started putting themselves on the boards of these Silicon Valley companies to make sure that the people who were going they were going to give funding to, whoever won in the competition, they didn't just pick one winner and say, this is the guy who's going to do it. No. They gave money to a variety of people who were going to do this. This is the way DARPA always operates in its projects. They seed money to a lot of different competitors and see who can come up with the most effective solutions. But they're all working towards the same end. So as he put it, Alexander Howard, we've got a supercomputer in our pocket that gives us godlike powers, but they can also be used against us. Let me tell you who's got the godlike powers. Godlike powers are not our powers. It's the people who are monitoring. Uber and Lyft, especially Uber, has what they call their God view. They can see where all their drivers are at any given time and what is happening and their passengers and so forth. These surveillance devices, these phones, and I've talked about it before, how there was a slide, the only part of the Snowden documents, and it was Der Spiegel in Germany that covered that this particular document. It was not covered in the U.S. because in the U.S., the corporate press does not want to offend Apple Computer. But in Germany, they showed it. And they said, who would have thought in 1984, and they showed the iconic 1984 Super Bowl commercial that Apple did to introduce the Mac. Who would have thought in 1984, next slide, that this would be Big Brother, and it shows Steve Jobs holding up a phone. And the third slide is a bunch of people lined up at the Apple store to get it, and the caption says, and that they would line up to pay for it. It gave them godlike powers over us. They are omniscient. They know everything about us. With geospatial intelligence, they can tell what our religious beliefs are, what our political beliefs are, who we're in contact with all the time. And this is why they're trying to usher this in terms of contact tracing and other issues as part of this fake pandemic. But it gives them complete omniscience. And it makes them all-powerful, omnipotent. And it makes them omnipresent. Those are the three aspects, three attributes that really define God, in a sense, you know, his powers. Omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence. Knowing everything, all-powerful, and present everywhere. And that is what these things do. They give them godlike powers over us. On Friday, the San Francisco Giants played their home opener, requiring proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test within 72 hours of the game. And the person who was the team's chief executive order told the media, quote, we will have the safest spot on planet Earth. When you're coming to a game, you know you're going to be safe, and you'll feel good about it. Selling the fear. And so where is this headed? I think probably the best and most ominous example of this is what's happening on the Caribbean island of St. Vincent with the volcano. They have power and water outages there. After being quiet for 42 years on Friday, came back to life, blanketing the island in ash, permeating the air with a stench of sulfur. The ash buildup on some of the power lines was contributing to extensive electrical outages. That's how much it is hitting. And the landscape of beautiful St. Vincent is shrouded in ash from overnight explosions and ash venting from the volcano. Now, when we look at this, I just have to say that it's not just the covering of ash, and it's not just the danger of this volcano exploding more. I mean, even if these people who cannot get power or water anymore because of what this is doing to the environment there. There is a special word. I didn't write it down because I'm not really sure how to pronounce it. It's 45 characters long, but it's specifically about, and that's long. I mean, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is only 34 characters long. This thing is 45 characters long. So it's a big smash together word. About microscopic particles in your lungs from volcanoes. It's got a special disease that comes with that. It just tears your lungs up. This is the environment in which these people are left to suffer. You know, we look at Pompeii, and you look at what happened to the people there, dying in agony. They were not left there deliberately, right? These people who died in agony, this was not a cynical political agenda to deny them the ability to get out of there because they didn't have a vaccine passport. But that is exactly what is happening on St. Vincent. They describe the new lava flows as a moving mass of destruction. The majority of the country now out of power and covered in ash. Day three and everything looks like a battle zone, said the National Emergency Management Organization, NEMO. Well, you know, we could certainly use Captain Nemo right now to get these people off the island, because the problem is that these cruise ships are not letting people get on board unless they have a vaccine passport. And before we get into that, the reality of something happening like Pompeii is always present. This volcano is named, it's a French name that means sulfur mine. It hasn't erupted since 1979, but it had a big blow up about a century ago, 1902, so 120 years ago. It killed more than 1,000 people. So everything is covered in ash. You have a very, very serious respiratory disease. Let me tell you, this respiratory disease that you get from breathing in the ash is far worse than COVID. But you have the possibility that 1,000 people could die from this, as did 120 years ago. These people who are being left behind can slowly die from this respiratory issue. They have no water, no power. But cruise ships are on the way. Nevertheless, you have government officials talking about how they're not going to let people on, as they gave a press briefing. Here we go.
On the Caribbean island of St. Vincent. After the first volcanic eruption there in more than 40 years, the volcano sent a thick cloud of smoke 20,000 feet into the sky, spewing ash for miles. Cruise ships are evacuating people from the island, but only those vaccinated against COVID.
Only those vaccinated against COVID. As Zero Hedge says, horror on St. Vincent. Only the vaccinated evacuees are able to flee. Only people who are vaccinated can get on the cruise ships. As they point out, this COVID passport deal is a slippery slope. And it has been frighteningly demonstrated with great clarity in this life and death situation. We don't care. We're going to leave you to die. Let me tell you, this is how bad this is. And this is being done by the corporations, the cruise ships. It's being done by their own government there on St. Vincent, and it's being done by the neighboring governments in the outlying islands where they're going to be taking some of these people. The sun's been essentially blacked out by a massive blanket of ash. The islanders are told that they will not be rescued, however, if they don't have a COVID vaccination. One of the worst nightmare scenarios. But as we've seen in Israel, the brutal repression of people who do not take the vaccine. And now here in St. Vincent in the Caribbean, the agreement of multiple governments, including their own, to let them die if they don't have the vaccine passport. Get the jab or face death by the volcano is the apparent logic. The St. Vincent and the Grenadines Prime Minister told reporters in a press conference on Saturday, this is what CBS was reporting, that only vaccinated people would be able to evacuate on the cruise ship. The chief medical officer would be identifying the persons already vaccinated so that we can get them on the ship. They said the vaccination rules appear to be also implemented by the neighboring island governments of Barbados, Grenada, Antigua, and St. Lucia's island nations. These countries will only accept fully vaccinated refugees. So they're saying, don't bother to put them on the ships because they're not going to let them come into the country. Their own government says you're not going to get on the ships. And the ships, to their shame, are not saying, we'll take these people anyway. We'll take them somewhere. When we talk about refugees, we talk about the border crisis. It's always justified by saying, well, we have to bring in people who are refugees. They may be Al-Qaeda. We don't really know. They may be ISIS. We don't really know. But we need to bring them in. We don't have time to vet them. But when you have innocent people who are at danger of being killed by a volcano, who are being poisoned, their lungs are being destroyed by the ash, we're told we're not going to make an exception for that if they don't have the vaccine. Do you understand how insidious this obsession with vaccines has become with all global governments? This is not about health. This is not about concern for anybody's health, folks. You can see that in this. You can see that it is their vaccine rules that are going to establish their globalist rule. That is what they're focused on. One person commented on Twitter, because that's the only place, you know, people, not government officials, but people, see how insidious this is. This is my worst nightmare about vaccine segregation. This has to redouble our determination to never, never allow COVID passes. I call this crimes against humanity. Well, let's call it corporicide, maybe. You know, we have talked about, when we talk about gun control, said one of the most frightening things about gun control is that it leaves weapons solely in the hand of government. Chairman Mao said, power comes out of the barrel of a gun. And he was going to make sure that he had all the guns. And Mao is a good example of what many people have termed democide, death by government, because in the 20th century, more people were killed by their own government than were killed in wars fighting for their government, or killed in battle or civilian population attacks. More people were killed by governments, by the kinds of government that we're setting up here in this country and in every country globally right now, by authoritarian, dictatorial governments, totalitarian governments. You had the Soviet Union, you had Mao's communist China. The communists in the 20th century killed over 100 million people of their own people, people that were their political opponents, people that they just wanted to kill as a culling, whether it is the starvation program that was brought about by the Great Leap Forward with Mao, or whether it was the program against the people in the Ukraine by Stalin to whip them into submission, the place where that was essentially the breadbasket of the Soviet Union. They starved those people to death for political purposes. And let me tell you, our governments today, make no doubt about it, is anything being done by the Biden administration? Oh, let's leave the borders open so we can get all these people in. Humanitarian, of course, right? No, that's not the agenda there either. And they're not flying in there and airlifting people out, or sending in the Navy to get people out of these nearby Caribbean nations. They're going to let them die from the volcano because they don't have a vaccination passport. Yeah, we call it democide, death by government. We could maybe call this corporicide, death by corporations. Our governing corporations, our corporatocracy. Or maybe we could just call it fascism, because that's when government and corporations merge. Nearly 20,000 people have been forced out of their homes on St. Vincent, but they're not going to go anywhere else. So the two cruise lines that are there, there's two Royal Caribbean cruise ships, two Carnival cruise ships that arrived on Friday. Neither one of them have mentioned anything about keeping unvaccinated passengers off of their ships. Royal Caribbean did say that all precautions will be taken to protect the health and safety of the crew and the passengers who are already on board our ship. But they would not elaborate any further. Let me say this. It's not an excuse to say that the government wants to keep people off, or these other governments do not want to accept people in their countries because they don't have a vaccine passport. These people who run these cruise lines are every bit as guilty as these government officials. You do not have to obey orders to kill people. This goes back to the Milgram experiment. People are willing to kill others to follow authority. That's very well established. Vast majority of people, 2/3 of the people will do that. 2/3 of the people will give a false answer if the group says that this, gives an obviously false answer. People will follow the group. People will follow authority figures, even if it means killing other people. And that's what we're seeing there. In Denver, we had one bar. The Bar Max in Denver is now open. The interesting thing about this is this guy says, well, I was afraid to open until I got vaccinated twice. So now he's reopening the bar, and he's put a sign out, you're not going to come into the bar unless you're fully vaccinated too. But he's wearing a mask, at least one mask. So he's been fully vaccinated twice, and he is wearing a mask, and he is still afraid to have people come in. And he puts it out this way. This is the way he couches it. Well, we're not refusing service to anyone. We still have takeout options, and we still have a patio. So there you go. You don't have to. See, isn't that nice? It's not like the old Jim Crow laws. You don't have to sit at the end of the counter. It's worse. You have to stay outside. Your kind is not even allowed in to these public accommodations. And we don't have any government officials outside of DeSantis who's even taken this up. Abbott hasn't. Brad Little hasn't. So he says, it's just my intention to keep the community safe. Well, why would he have to keep the community safe? Why is he wearing a mask? See, if the vaccines work, why are you wearing the mask? Because the vaccines don't work, and he knows that. You can't have herd immunity if you don't have individual immunity. If you're not concerned about the health of individuals, you're not concerned about the health of the herd either. And herd immunity is a concept that was put out before, well before, there were any mass vaccine campaigns. Because in order to have herd immunity, you have to have lasting immunity, and the vaccines, none of the vaccines, whether it's MMR or this, none of them have lasting immunity if they convey any immunity at all. It doesn't last. Long before this happened, we've been fighting this coming vaccine mandate scenario for many years. And over those years, I've talked about measles outbreaks where patient zero and everybody that got measles were all vaccinated twice. Their answer was, well, I guess we need to do it three times. No, if you don't have lasting immunity, and in many of these vaccine cases, you don't have any immunity at all. That's what we're seeing with these COVID vaccines. You only have risk. And so you're not going to get herd immunity from something that doesn't convey individual immunity. In North Carolina, you have the Democrat governor there, Roy Cooper, is now joining along with Cuomo, saying his administration is discussing the creation of standardized records for people to show, prove that they're vaccinated. So there you go. This is going to be the approach. The Democrat governors are going to be pushing to facilitate this and even mandate it in every way possible, while the while Biden and most of the Republican governors will say, well, we're not going to do it at our level, but we're not going to stop the businesses from doing it. As a matter of fact, we will help them if they choose to do that. We're going to take a quick break, then we're going to talk about the vaccine itself. Some of the things that have come to light in the last few days about the vaccine, as well as the different approaches from different Christians to the lockdown. And I focus on this because I got to say, you got to have people who are going to be willing to stand up against this, whatever the cost. Occasionally, you'll find somebody like that coach who's willing to put their job, their life on the line to oppose the lie. But for the most part, most people are not going to be willing to put their job on the line. The Christians, however, will. They will go to jail. They will do other things to, if they're real Christians. They're not going to be deterred. It's not really in the, you know, you're going to have some businessmen who will do it just because they're hardcore about freedom and liberty. And you'll have some people who are being required to do it as part of their job. We've got a lawsuit from prison guard. We have this guy who was just fired. I hope he sues them as well because he would not impose masks. But for the most part, employees and businesses are not going to fight this. I think it's going to have to be something that's going to have to be part of a rebirth of ethics. And then we can talk about how we're going to come together and work together politically, how we're going to use the lesser magistrates to achieve this. But you're fundamentally going to have people who have the moral background to oppose this. Then we can talk about how we're going to structure this politically. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. All right, I had a listener send this to me, going through the statistics. I talked about it last week. I said, you realize that the number of injuries and deaths reported to the vaccine adverse effects system, reporting system, VAERS, V-A-E-R-S, Adverse Events Reporting System. You realize that we've had more in the last 10 years, or last 3 months than we did in the last 10 years, and combined, and that the number of injuries, including deaths, for the first quarter of this year, and we weren't even vaccinating people with these new untested vaccines for the entire first quarter, but the number of problems reported to the CDC's own database, VAERS, was up by 6,000%. This listener sent this to me. And last 3 months, greater than the total for the past 11 years. And this is an article from USSANews.com. And what is becoming the most censored story probably in the history of the United States, the CDC has reported this week that 2,794 deaths have been reported to VAERS as of April the 5th. So this is new data. The stuff that I had was as of the previous reporting period, which is like March the 27th or something. So this is up to April the 5th. So as many as 2,794, let's just call it 2,800 deaths, following injections of the three experimental non-FDA-approved injections. From 2010 through the end of 2020, an entire decade spanning 11 years, because you're including start year, there were a total of 2,588 deaths recorded following the vaccines. So deaths following vaccines during the first 3 months of 2021 have now exceeded the total deaths for the past 11 years. Again, repeating it. First 3 months of 2021, 2,800 deaths. 11 years cumulative. Before that, 2,600 deaths. Which means the comparative rate of vaccine deaths that they're forcing everybody to get, coercing everybody to get, is now 44 times higher. 44 times higher. That's right. So that's 11 years, and we're only looking at one quarter of a year. So it's 11 years, and it's more than 44 times higher. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine has now been suspended at the Georgia site. I talked about how they suspended it at Dick's. It was the same vaccine at Dick's. It was the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. As a matter of fact, this is now the fourth, Georgia is now the fourth state to pause the Johnson & Johnson vaccine due to people having adverse reactions immediately. Immediately. There is no question about this. I mean, most of these things are happening within the first 48 hours. But these are people, so many people are getting immediately sick that they shut it down in Boulder, Colorado. They shut it down in Georgia. And then after they shut it down, the officials come in. These are the people who are on site. Ooh, this is bad. Look at it. We've got 8 people here in Georgia. They had 18, they reported, in Boulder, Colorado. Then they took it down and said, no, it was 13. Then they said, no, it was 11. You had people who show up and said, yeah, I saw multiple ambulances taking people out. But, you know, it was a real bummer. I waited there for a long time to get it, and then they told me I couldn't get it. It's like, what are you thinking here? It's kind of the old joke. You would, if you were at a restaurant, you're going to a restaurant, and you see the ambulance there, and they're taking somebody out of the restaurant. Now, it could be a heart attack or whatever. It may not be related to what they're having. But, you know, it kind of makes you stop and think, right? Do I really want to eat here? But you got multiple ambulances taking people out of a vaccination spot, and people stay in line. And then they get upset when they're not allowed to get it. And then you have these state officials who come in, because they're not concerned. They're not on site, and they're not concerned. Dave Palmer, the North Georgia Health District spokesperson, said, it was a fainting issue. We don't think it had anything to do with the vaccine. It's probably more of an environmental factor. The facility is really hard to cool, and we do have fans there, but it was a warmer day. I think the heat may have had some bearing on it. We're not sure. This guy's got blood on his hands. These people lying about this kind of stuff. Was it heat in Boulder, Colorado? Was it heat in the other 3 states? It doesn't matter how many people. You can have people dropping dead from this, and they'll continue to say, there's nothing to see. It's like Martin Short's 60 Minutes character as he sweats and smokes a cigarette. So funny that you'd say that. I don't know why you would say that. I don't see anything. Do you? they said, and then they start playing the numbers game. In Georgia, they say, well, there were 435 vaccines administered on that site on Wednesday. Less than 2% of those people had reactions. Let me say, these are the same people who one person tests positive. We're going to shut down a city of millions in Auckland, right? Quarantine everybody. Not because they're even sick, because they tested positive on a PCR test that is magnifying viral debris by a factor of 2 to the 40th power, 1 trillion times magnification. We get one person who tests positive under that scenario, not even sick, and put the whole city of Auckland, New Zealand, under lockdown, over 1 million people. We've had states, entire states, shut down, tens of millions of people. Oh, we got 8 cases here. Look at this. It's a surge. Well, if you have a surge of people getting sick immediately at a vaccine site, that's nothing to see here. And they start saying, well, you know, let's talk about the risk. That's a 2% chance. Okay, 2% chance. What is your chance of dying with COVID, even if you're sick with COVID? 0.1%. So you're going to take 20 times the risk with this? For what? For what? And you see how they're skewing these numbers here, and how now they want to talk about risks and percentages that they never wanted to talk about for the last year. Do you think that they're presenting those to you as well? The other 3 states, they said, well, of course, Colorado, I talked about that. This also happened in North Carolina and in Iowa. But, of course, the North Carolina Democrat governor, Roy Cooper, wants to have vaccine passport. Colorado, meanwhile, goes back and looks at this situation where it was it 18? Was it 13? Was it 11? No, nobody was hurt, even though we had two ambulances taking people out. Colorado finds, quote, no cause for concern with the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine used at Dick's Sporting Goods. How predictable. How predictable. After reviewing each patient's symptoms, analyzing other vaccinations from the same lot, and speaking with the CDC, that's the most important thing, we're confident in saying there's no reason for concern because, you know, the CDC sells vaccines. They make billions every year selling vaccines for these people. And they're saying there's nothing wrong here. So there's nothing wrong. Food and Drug Administration also didn't find anything unusual. Yeah, our government is completely corrupt. And they have a naked agenda here. And this is naked insanity. When you go for your vaccine appointment, they say bring a beverage, a snack, bring a friend or family member to help and to offer some reassurance, they said. Well, isn't that funny, too? Because, you know, you're not allowed to have friends in your social bubble unless you're going to get a vaccine. Of course, you haven't been vaccinated and neither has your friend. They don't care about that. Well, bring them along anyway, you know? Yeah, it's part of the little pat on the head we give you if you follow our orders. So go get your vaccine. Bring a beverage, a snack, a friend, a family member, whatever, right? But no, you do that in any other setting, you're going to get the truncheon upside your head or some fines. Pro-life group is holding a prayer rally at a Catholic church that is allowing the Johnson & Johnson vaccine distribution. And this is happening as we've got a lot of Catholic and Protestant leaders who are now pushing this cannibal medicine. That's what this is. This is cannibalism. To use our children to create medicine for us, and we have these so-called ethics leaders. We've got a Southern Baptist guy that I'll talk to you about here in just a second. It's actually head of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Board, but he doesn't see anything wrong with it. He thinks it's great to have cannibal medicine. So they were there to protest the distribution of the abortion-tainted Johnson & Johnson vaccines by a free clinic that's housed on the campus of a Catholic church in Carmel, Indiana. During a 2001 hearing of the Food and Drug Administration, a physician revealed how he harvested fetal cells to be used for experimentation and development and manufacture these vaccines. Here's what the physician said about the fetal cells. These are the baby that he's harvesting. So I isolated the retina from the fetus, from a healthy fetus as far as we could be seen, 18 weeks old. There was nothing special with a family history. And the pregnancy was completely normal up to the 18 weeks, and it turned out to be a socially indicated abortus. And he says, abortus provocatus. And that was simply because the woman wanted to get rid of the fetus. Think about that. They can call the baby fetus. They can call the abortion abortus provocatus. This is nothing but sophistry, folks. You want to sound sophisticated? You want to keep people from really seeing what's happening? Well, you do that by picking the term. As I've said before, this is always the way that these people lie and deceive people. They pick the terms. We're liberals. We're progressive. No. They don't want any progress, and they don't want freedom. That's what liberal used to stand for. They grab these labels, and then they apply labels to you. And we dutifully go along with them for the most part. We now call ourselves red states. We used to say better dead than red because we used to understand where the lines were drawn. But we don't anymore. We let them set the terms of the debate. You are not pro-life. You're anti-abortion rights. That's what the style sheet that comes out from AP. This is how you're going to write, or the Associated Press is not going to forward your articles around. You will get canceled by them. If you are a news writer and you use the term pro-life, you will use the term anti-abortion rights, or the Associated Press will spike your story. So they go along with it. When we found out that we were going to be a vaccine site, we reached out to our pastor and the bishop, said the Catholic Church, and we got a blessing from both of them. Well, there you go. That's all you need. Who cares what God says? Who cares what basic human ethics tell you about grinding up your kids for medicine? I bet Pope Fauci was also approving of that, and probably he also gave it his blessing. In Australia, Victorians have been turned away from the vaccination hubs after they recommended against the AstraZeneca jab for people under the age of 50. Under the age of 50. So, you know, when we look at this, they've had doctors in Australia, because AstraZeneca was the one that had the very well-documented issues with what had previously been an extremely rare blood disease, causing blood clots that have in many cases proved to be fatal. They have linked these in no uncertain terms to the AstraZeneca vaccine. But then they came back and they said, yeah, but it's such a small percentage of people. We think it's worthwhile. You need to do that. And we've got at least two journalists that I'm aware of. I wouldn't call them journalists. They don't read. These are presenters. At least two presenters, two women who came out and said, well, here's my chance. It's one in a million or whatever. So I'm going to get this because I'm going to take my chances. Even if it kills me, I'm going to get this vaccine. They're presenting that propaganda to people. They're presenters. And so you've got doctors who've stopped offering this because they're concerned about malpractice. This is so well known. It doesn't matter that the European Medicines Association, the EMA, that they've said, we don't care. Do it anyway. See this? I mean, nobody ever, can you imagine if people were dying by the thousands after taking hydroxychloroquine? Now, that never happened. So why is it that hydroxychloroquine was pushed off, that people had their medical licenses revoked, they were fired, you had threats by Governor Whitmer in Michigan to take away the license of pharmacists who prescribed hydroxychloroquine? Why was all that done with hydroxychloroquine when nobody died? And yet, with these vaccines, 2,800 people so far in the first quarter, and not even a full quarter, and more than that in Europe. More than twice that in Europe, mainly because this AstraZeneca thing. And they know what the effect is on it, but they won't stop it. In Australia, they said many of the nation's GPs, general practitioners, are refusing to offer the AstraZeneca vaccine to people under 50 until the federal government urgently clarifies their legal liability. This is all they're concerned about. They're not concerned about the ethics. Whatever happened to do no harm? We don't care about that. Can I be sued? You see how corrupt our countries have become? Not just our institutions. The institutions are the way they are because of the people. It's the people who are corrupt. These are the GPs who are saying, what if patients suffer serious or fatal side effects? All they care about is legal immunity. Ethics be damned. Do no harm be damned. We don't care. Is this going to cost me anything? It's all about money. And this is why these dangerous solutions are being pushed. It's about money. It's about power. The GPs are warning that they could face expensive lawsuits if they advise a patient under 50 to have the AstraZeneca vaccine, because they know that it's dangerous. And they know they would have liability. But they don't care. And so here's what the government responded then, because the government also does not care about you being harmed. So the government comes out to reassure them that they have no legal liability.
Indemnity. I want to make something very, very clear. Australia already has vaccine indemnity agreements in place. The AMA and
no
the
worries,
College
hey.
Of General Practitioners have clear advice in writing from the government to that effect. And they also have updated informed consent materials. So no doctor need worry. I am saying this on behalf of the government. but also on behalf of our legal advice, no doctor need worry.
No doctor need worry. Pharmaceutical companies don't need to worry either. Pharmaceutical companies are protected, and the doctors are protected. You know who's not protected? The patients. And if the patients are harmed, they have no recourse against the doctors who knowingly did this. Against the vaccine companies who knowingly did this. And the government is knowingly giving these people protection. The only people not protected are the patients. And why not? I mean, have you ever heard of a lab rat suing the lab? Because that's what we've been reduced to. We're cattle. We're lab rats. We have no right. They consider us to have no freedom, no dignity. Yeah, the government is partnering with the pharmaceutical companies, the big pharmacia, who did not repent of their murders or their greed. And neither did the government. And now, neither do the doctors repent of their murders and their greed. Up to 80% in Sicily are refusing the AstraZeneca vaccine, saying, I'm going to have to shoot you here. That's my wife's part Italian, and some of the family comes from Sicily. And so it's a big thing with Italians, always get you to eat that next bite. It's a point of honor with the women. And my wife picked up some of that as well. They would have some of the cousins when the grandmother would come around and keep pushing food. And hold their hand up like a pistol and say, I'm going to have to, and not say anything. That's just the implication is I'm going to have to shoot you if you don't stop. So I guess if they don't stop with the AstraZeneca thing, they're going to have to shoot them. But that's about the only thing that will stop them. Because everybody knows it's a rare, fatal blood disease that is definitely coming from the AstraZeneca vaccine. And so the government official there says, well, it's natural for people to be particularly concerned, but we have a duty to believe scientists, do we? Do we have a duty to believe scientists? Science is not belief. Science is not faith. Science is a show me. Show me. It's like Harry Truman. Show me. Right? As a matter of fact, when Francis Bacon formulated the scientific method, the first two things that he came after were, do not trust arguments from authority. Do not trust arguments from consensus. And the only time we ever have any scientific breakthroughs is when people challenge the authorities, when people challenge the consensus. I've mentioned it before, but the Wright brothers, good example. You had Langley. One of the most honored, prestigious scientists at the time. He was head of the Smithsonian Institute, and they've now, you know, they've named Langley Air Force Base after him and so forth. But he was just worshipped by the establishment. But he was trying to make a flying machine, and he couldn't get his to fly. And you know why he couldn't get it to fly? Because he was using lift tables that he trusted because they were also done by a very reputable scientist. But they were wrong. On the contrary, you had the Wright brothers, a couple of bicycle shop mechanics who had been homeschooled. And they were able to get a plane to fly because they questioned the lift tables. They didn't trust authority. They didn't trust that these tables had to be right because this is a very reputable scientist. They did their own observations, they created their own lift tables, and then they based their aircraft on their own experiments and data. They got it right. Langley failed because he was part of a scientific establishment. Italy is one of the countries worst hit by the pandemic, say, with almost 114,000 dead. Let me tell you, this is the numbers game. This is the numbers game that they continue to play against us. And the numbers game, especially in Italy, was exposed weeks before we had Trump and Fauci lock us down with the vaccine ransomware plan. Weeks before. They came out and said, we've got multiple weeks of data. It was John Rappaport who first reported the information. But of course, you never saw it from mainstream media. Some other places picked it up as well. But they had 2 weeks worth of data. They showed that the average age of the person 1 week was 80 and a half. The next week, it was 79 and a half average age. And that typical person had 2.6 comorbidities. And there was nothing that we needed to be concerned about with that. That was simply natural. It was not an epidemic. It was not anything out of the ordinary. And of course, last summer, we had Italian member of parliament, several of them, angrily demanding an audit of what had happened. So we don't believe these numbers. We have seen what you're doing in selected cases. We want an audit of this. Of course, we never get an audit, just like we don't get an audit of what the Federal Reserve is doing. It's a numbers game. And these people are making this stuff up. And you're not allowed to see what happened. And of course, if you talk about individual cases, well, those are simply anecdotes. But they used individual anecdotes over and over again at the beginning. Easily debunked, as a matter of fact. I remember when they had a guy who was a soccer player in Spain, the very beginning of this. Long article, highlighted on the Drudge Report. Look at this guy, healthy young soccer player. He was a coach, and he's in early 20s. And he died. And in the middle of this 6 or 7 page article, there was one paragraph said that they found out when they took him in, he didn't know he was sick, but he had advanced lung cancer. But it was COVID that killed him. But here's a 22-year-old Israeli girl, dead, not from Johnson & Johnson, not from AstraZeneca, but from Pfizer. Now, she died, this 22-year-old girl, perfectly healthy, gets the vaccine, and dies within 2 weeks from myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle. According to the Times of Israel, there have been many other cases of myocarditis among Israelis who received both of their Pfizer shots, but the others had been successfully treated. At the hospital, she was diagnosed with myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle. Her boyfriend said the doctor minimized it and said, it's no worse than a swollen shoulder. He said, okay, 3 or 4 days a week, I'll be here with her as much as needed. But then her family said she just deteriorated before their eyes. No one, just no one, even lifted a hand and said she isn't receiving care. So they're going to be taking legal action. But again, the mass malpractice that we have seen in the wake of this lockdown is absolutely amazing. Of course, the Montana governor, last week, he and his wife had no symptoms. 59 years old, they get the double dose, and still neither of them have any symptoms, but they're testing positive for the disease. And as I said before, if you're going to inject people with viral debris that you're also testing for, and this viral debris is set up to reproduce, and then you're going to test for viral debris. You're going to magnify it by 2 to the 40th power, cycle threshold of 40, which is a 1 trillion times magnification. That may be what they're picking up. This may just be a combination of the vaccine and the PCR test at a cycle threshold of 40. The CDC says in its advice to fully vaccinated people, you should continue to wear a mask, stay 6 feet apart from others, and avoid crowds and indoor spaces. In other words, nothing changes. Why would you go through a risk that, by their own statistics, is more than 20 times higher than you would if you had COVID, even from their own numbers? And we know they've cooked the numbers. According to the Montana Department of Public Health, those who died with the virus were between 29 and 103 years of age, with a median age of, wait for it, 79. And that's a better way to judge it than an average. That means that half of the people who got it were over 79 years old, and half the people were under it. Half the people who died in Montana were over 80. Life expectancy is somewhere in the mid-70s. So more than half of the people who died were well past life expectancy. And there are also indications that a very large percentage of those hospitalized in Montana also had other health problems. Yeah, not news, actually, at this point. Reason, however, Ronald Bailey at Reason has been the most shameless cheerleader of big pharmaceutical companies that I've seen anywhere. And this is another example of his article. Don't suspend the vaccine patents. We're already on track to vaccinate 7 billion people in 2021. This is working, folks. Don't mess anything up. Don't take the profits away from the greedy big pharmaceutical companies at all. No, no. No, this is the way the libertarians, who can never see business doing anything wrong. This is their response. Vaccinating billions of people across the globe is an urgent necessity. Why? It wasn't an urgent necessity to let people take hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or vitamin C. We had thugs from the FDA coming in and closing down clinics where they were giving people large intravenous dosages of vitamin C, which is a very, very, that is the most effective way that you can get vitamin C. No. We're going to keep that away from people. We can only have the ransomware, the vaccine. So he says, how can we speed up the process of getting vaccines distributed around the world? Well, one proposal being floated by the World Trade Organization, by a group of about 100 poorer countries, is to temporarily suspend intellectual property rules related to COVID-19 vaccine and treatments. Bad idea, they said. We need these people's expertise. By the way, this is an argument that was made by Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler said, you know, he called himself a socialist, just like Stalin. They called themselves socialists as well. The Soviet Socialist Republic. And, you know, you had Hitler. They were the National Socialists. And the difference between them was not that one of them had a global perspective. This is the way the traditional political pundits set it up. Well, one of them had a global perspective. That was the Russians. The Nazis were nationalist in their perspective. Well, that was a distinction, but the real difference between them was, as Adolf Hitler put it, he said, Stalin made a big tactical error. He nationalized these businesses from the start. I'm not going to do that at the beginning. I'm going to leave them in place because these people know how to operate. So I'm going to partner with them. And then when I'm securely in power everywhere, then I'll slit their throats. This is the argument being made by Reason Magazine, the argument that Adolf Hitler made. To let these people continue to run no matter what they're doing because they're more efficient at it. They're arguing for big pharma profits, even though, and again, these libertarians are arguing for these massive public works programs. They're arguing that we should have all the testing shut down. Pharmaceutical companies were given more than $20 billion by President Trump in just the first round, and they've been given funding since then. They've had their product delivered by the military. They've had the liability taken away. Why, as libertarians, would you support any of that? There's no authority under the Constitution for this. This is crony capitalism and corruption writ large. There is no honesty. There is no marketplace. There is no informed consent. There is no individual liberty in any of this. This is nothing other than fascist corporatism that is being applauded by conservative and libertarian think tanks, and sadly by Pat Buchanan drinking the Kool-Aid as well. Where does Pat Buchanan draw the lines on the vaccine? Well, you know, Reason Magazine takes a side of, we want patent protection and profits for the big companies. Big companies are not evil. Big companies are the best companies. Pat Buchanan looks at it as nationalism versus globalism. Again, does that make a difference between Stalin and Hitler? Do you want to live under either one of those systems? Pat Buchanan says, who should get the priority in receiving these life-saving shots? So his focus, people are mapping on their political perspectives onto this without any regard to ethics or to safety or to efficacy or to constitutional issues or to the draconian tyranny that's being brought in. No. They're just looking at this. We've got to have the vaccines. That's where they start. Got to have the vaccines. We don't have anything that'll treat this. Yes, we do. And the withdrawal of that should tell you that this is a lie. But his perspective on this is that this is a competition, just like Reason was talking about, between different countries as to who's going to have it first. And so he says, is it wrong for the U.S. government to put Americans first in the distribution of life-saving vaccines ahead of people from other countries? Is it wrong for the U.S. to ensure that every American who wants to get a shot gets one? Is it wrong for America to put Americans first? Pat, Americans are not being put first. Pharmaceutical greed is being put first. That's what's being put first. This is not about science. This is not about anything that has to do with America. America is about the rule of law and individual liberties and a government that was created to protect those liberties. This has nothing to do with America. This is Americans last, corporate profits and corruption first. He said vaccine nationalism seems a synonym for vaccine patriotism. No. Resistance to tyranny is patriotism. Resistance to vaccine corporatism, to vaccine fascism, is patriotism. So disappointed. You have a TV personality who boasted of being vaccinated, died, Midwin Charles, died at age 47. Celebrity legal analyst and TV personality for, wait for it, CNN, who was trying to shame Fox News and CNN and Tucker Carlson and Ducey. Trying to say, they need to be modeling this on air. Shame on them. You know, we need to be brainwashing people. I'm sure that there'll be a lot of pressure on them because Rupert Murdoch gets a lot of cash from the Ask Your Doctor commercials and the pharmaceutical industry. They don't even need the pressure from CNN. I'm sure these guys are feeling the heat from the Murdochs. Midwin Charles' untimely death comes just after a month after receiving her first injection with Pfizer's experimental mRNA vaccine, reports LifeSite News. No cause of death has been announced. Most likely will not. If they wanted to say it was COVID, they would just presume it. They would not do an autopsy. Again, autopsy is very, 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 very rarely done. It's just a judgment call. But we can't make any judgment calls about this. She said when she got it, just got vaccinated at a FEMA center. Everyone at the site is in uniform. Yeah, nothing to see here, right? It's a military-industrial complex takeover. She uploaded another post a few hours later, noting that she was deathly allergic to peanuts, apparently giving her enough concern to want to take her EpiPen to the vaccine clinic in case I go into anaphylactic shock. This is a Pfizer vaccine. And as RFK Jr. and his Children's Health Defense Fund pointed out in September and warned the FDA, who said, we don't care. Send your stuff to Pfizer, see if they care. Pfizer didn't care either. Why would they? They've got legal immunity. But they said, we've noticed that you're using PEG, polyethylene glycol, that you're wrapping these nanoparticles in polyethylene glycol, PEG, pegylated. And we expect to see this creating anaphylactic shock. And it has with a lot of people. Did not with her. She did not seem to suffer anaphylactic attack. But she did write on her Twitter profile that she was experiencing, quote, a little soreness at the vaccine injection site within 24 hours. Updating 2 days later that the pain had dissipated. See, it's not the vaccine. It's dissipated. And if you come down with severe systemic disease within a year or two or 10, it's not the vaccine either. Yeah, I mean, even if you die within 24 hours, it's not the vaccine. She then reported having mild fatigue and then shortness of breath. Despite her worry of possible anaphylaxis and experience of pain from the injection, she proceeded to exert pressure on her mother to get the vaccine. And apparently, she said she convinced her to take the jab after weeks of pressure. But she's passed away. No update on the cause. A 68-year-old Kansas woman, Jeannie M. Evans, died last month after suffering an anaphylactic reaction to the vaccine shortly after receiving the jab. A mother of five experienced an allergic reaction while waiting in the vaccine clinic after having had the shot, was subsequently administered an EpiPen to try to control her difficulty in breathing and in speaking, but she died nevertheless. And so this news reporter, who evidently didn't do due diligence or who just figured that it wasn't going to affect her, went down that path anyway. As I said before, you got a lot of colleges now pushing for COVID-19 vaccines. We should call them the Ivy League. Here's a dishonor roll of some of these people. We have Rutgers, Notre Dame, two Ivy. That's the old kind of Ivy. This is the Intervetus League, though. The old Ivy League schools, Brown and Cornell. Duke University. They like to present themselves as Ivy League School of South, so now they're part of the Intervetus League. This is the dishonor roll. They said, in addition to becoming a distribution site for the vaccine, Rutgers University, the first ones to announce this, and now you got multiple following in behind them. They said they will also begin a mass communication campaign to educate the student body about the importance of getting the vaccine. We're having students do videos as well. We need to take out the noise and concentrate on what the science says. Oh, there you go. And do not question what they say passes for science. And that is the pronouncements of authority, the consensus of the people who are selling this and pushing this to the exclusion of everything else. Top official admits the Chinese vaccines have a very low effectiveness. Isn't that amazing? They're more honest and candid than our own vaccine companies. The thing is, they don't have more integrity. They just don't have to worry about what people think. See, they've already established their dystopian totalitarian rule. So they don't care what you think anymore. No, they can say, yeah, they got low effectiveness. We don't really, not really caring about that. And again, as I mentioned, Brian Stelter and others are on a campaign of shame to try to get the Fox presenters vaccinated on camera. Good luck with Tucker Carlson. I don't think he's going to fall for that. I think he's wise to that. I think he's very obviously embarrassed and reluctant to be a part of Dr. Mark Siegel pushing this, relentlessly lying to the country about this. He's been on at least twice that I've seen him. He seems to be fed up and embarrassed by the obvious propaganda coming from him. But nevertheless, he lets him on. Lets him on. America may be close to hitting a vaccine wall. Now, this is interesting. Because listen to why they, this is Axios, why it matters. For the last few months, the primary focus of the U.S. has been getting shots to everyone who wants them as quickly as possible. Soon, that focus will abruptly shift to convincing holdouts to get vaccinated. What have I been saying? I've been saying that at the beginning, the focus is on rushing these things into production, rushing them out to everybody, and rushing to inject them in people's arms. And then as they do that, and as they ignore, no matter how painfully obvious, again, more people have died in one quarter of a year than have died in the last 11 years combined, according to the CDC's own database. 44 times. More fatal than all other vaccines that we've ever seen before. But doesn't matter. They're going to ignore that. They're going to cover that up. If you talk about it, you'll be purged off of YouTube. I can't put up anything about vaccines on YouTube. So don't bother to go to my YouTube channel. Look for the videos on BitChute, YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. So look for the videos there. You won't see any of this stuff there. I cut out stuff about the vaccines and put it there. And, of course, the full show is there, but not on. And even if I talk about the geopolitical aspects of this, I get censored, get strikes from YouTube. So we're going to just use that to direct people to other content Because the sad thing about it is that YouTube has such a large base. And it's amazing to me what they allow other people to say that they don't allow me to say. Nevertheless, the focus is now going to be convincing people. Now we're entering the propaganda stage. And the propaganda stage is going to be to discount any side effects, to continue to pressure people in every way possible, to get to pressure Fox anchors to get it on air and on and on. And then after they have got a large number of people that are on board with it, and they have a lot of vaccines out, and they're saying that the problem now is not the supply of vaccines. The problem is convincing people. They'll go through a propaganda stage. Then after that, they will go through the coercion stage. That is coming, the punishment stage. That is what's coming next. All right, we're going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about this from the ethical standpoint and about the challenge that we find in our Christian leaders and the institutions around them that have failed as badly as, if not worse, than our political institutions. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about some updates as to what is happening in Canada with the church that was closed. And I guess one of the troubling things about this is what we've seen everywhere. We have the virtue signaling snitches, the Stasi ethics that have been embraced by many people in our society. And that is certainly evidenced in Canada. The Edmonton Journal had been demanding before this happened, going back to March the 25th. Of course, this happened last weekend. Going back to March the 25th, there was an editorial from the Edmonton Journal saying the Alberta Health System, AHS, must shut the scofflaw church, demanding a church closure. And this is something that we've come to see very common, as journalists in America have now seen their role as demanding censorship of people that they oppose. And we understood the connection between these, between freedom of religion and freedom of speech here in America and the First Amendment, because both of those are controversial things. There's going to be a lot of disagreement amongst people. And if we allow certain political factions or people in power to shut down speech, political speech, and religions that they don't like, there is no end to that. And so we combine both of those together. The freedom of thought requires free speech and the freedom of religious beliefs, the free exercise of religious beliefs. But of course, our press, our governments do not support that anymore. And here's how they were pushing going back to March the 25th. For months now, Grace Life Church has held in-person services each Sunday in violation of public health orders. Now, if you were a rational person, if you were looking at this honestly instead of trying to enforce rules no matter what, you would say, they've been doing this for months and nobody is sick. Maybe the sickness is not a virus. Maybe the sickness is an authoritarian tyranny that is demanding blind obedience, but they're part of that authoritarian tyranny that's demanding blind obedience. They said they're exceeding the 15% capacity limit. Again, a thinking person would ask, what is scientific about that? Why 15%? Why not 16%? Why not 60%? Where's the science? Have you done any studies on this? Where's this coming from? These are simply edicts. These are simply dictates from dictators. Why 25%? Why 15%? Why any of this? What's the science behind it? An immediate closure order did not put a stop to this. Neither did laying charges twice against Pastor James Coates, his arrest, his jailing, or the charging of the church as an entity. All the while, AHS investigators, their health bureaucrats, who have the authority to shut down an establishment, should they have that authority? Shouldn't they have to prove that there's something going on here? Have stood by on site and allowed the packed services to continue. The RCMP, the Mounties, say the two bodies are conducting an ongoing investigation of the church's noncompliance. But what more do they need at this point? Begs the Edmonton Journal. Shut them down. It's a scofflaw church. No, you are the scofflaws. The AHS is a scofflaw of the Canadian Charter. The Mounties are scofflaws, disobeying the fundamental laws of that country. And the press is demanding that they do that. That's the sad situation that we face now in the West. This week, amid rising hospitalizations and COVID-19 cases and faster spreading of more contagious variants of concern, Alberta chose not to move forward. Now, again, are we allowed to audit those numbers that they claim are rising hospitalizations? Do we know that these are variants? Have we seen that data? No. We're just trusting the authorities and what they have to say. Again, if you want to audit this, if you want to think about this, think about the fact that they've been meeting for months since last summer and nothing has happened. They did the study for you. They volunteered. I thought you liked people who volunteer as lab rats. Well, they did. They volunteered as lab rats, but you're not content with that. Why then does AHS continue to allow Grace Life to break the rules? What are they afraid of? Are they afraid of God? I don't know. Constitution? Of creating a lawless society? Nah, full steam ahead. Bah humbug to all of that, right? Since the beginning of the pandemic, some Canadians have claimed that the measures put in place by the governments have violated their charter rights, including the freedom of religion. That's right. They said this sentiment is especially popular in Alberta, where the mindset of some is about freedom and personal responsibility. Shame on those radical extremists who are focused on freedom, personal responsibility, and the rule of law, the foundational rule of law, the foundation that was put there because of centuries of experience with despotism that we've now forgotten our history. And then they make the comparison that, hey, you know what? Things are worse in North Korea. Well, actually, they don't say North Korea. They have Ontario. In Ontario, you can have church services, but only 10 people in attendance. And the Attorney General there obtained a court order that forced Trinity Bible Chapel to follow that rule or risk being held in contempt of court. When nothing changed, the church elders were indeed found in contempt of court, fined $38,000, as well as $45,000 in legal fees. The church's lawyer later said in court that in-person services would be suspended until the end of the province's lockdown. So the Edmonton Journal says, we know how to beat these people. We can ignore the law, and we can impose excessive fines, and they'll cave. Trinity Bible Chapel and one other church, it says, will argue that the province has, quote, failed to consider and balance the harms that flow from the lockdown measures and the restrictions, failed to balance the harms on civil liberties, including the right to corporate worship, noting that harsh restrictions were intended to be temporary measures and have now existed for over 1 year. Yeah, where was the science in that? Yeah, we had the science experts who told us, hey, it's just 2 weeks, right? Don't believe any of it. Alberta's restrictions are not an outright ban on worship. See, 15% of you can meet here. Or if you're in Ontario, 10%. What's the difference? Isn't there some science involved here? Why is it only 10 people in Ontario and 15% in Alberta? Because this isn't about science. It's not about medicine. It's about politics. It's about tyranny. It's about what they can get away with in different jurisdictions. The politicians in Alberta are slightly more relaxed in comparison to the ones in Ontario because they don't want to provoke a rebellion. That's all it is. It's what you will put up with. That's the difference. It has nothing to do with science. They have the same Canadian experts. They have the same World Health Organization experts. But you have radically different approaches by their own admission. See, it's so much more strict in Ontario. Why can't we be that strict here? Shut these people down. Hammer them with excessive fines. What's the matter with you? Don't you have the will to govern with an iron rod? And of course, the press has already, last week, when they were describing James Coates, I pointed out, they said, well, he just got out of jail. He was in there for 35 days. They didn't say why. You know, is it for rape? Sexual assault, whatever. I mean, did he have a meth lab in that church? They didn't say these people locked him up for holding church services. And now what they're saying is you now have a campaign in the press there saying that the tack that they're taking to attack him personally, say he violated the order that he agreed to get out of jail. He never signed the order. Never signed the order. That's why they kept him in jail for 35 days. He refused to agree to their conditions to not meet in church. And they determined they were going to break his will, at least that one judge. Somebody else said, I don't think we like the optics of keeping this guy in jail until May, awaiting trial. So they let him out, suspended the criminal charges, and gave him a $1,500 fine. And it was all political. It was political to begin with. They release was political, but it had nothing to do with him agreeing. He refused to agree. That's why he stayed in for 35 days. Now they've got a new campaign saying he agreed to this, and now he's violating that agreement. No, never did. The conservative premier, Jason Kenney, in the province in Alberta, said, as they were having a protest yesterday, said it would be tragic if this led to a super spreader event. Here's the news, Premier Kenney. They've been protesting since last summer, and they haven't had a super spreader event. And they've had more people meeting inside the church than were meeting outside in protest. This is all based on fantasy, but what was really galling, in my opinion, was that this so-called conservative politician, Jason Kenney, said, I call on those who believe in the sanctity of life to act accordingly. Oh, really? You're going to compare this to abortion? What was aborted was religious liberty. What was aborted was the Canadian Charter of Rights. There were no lives lost. No one ever got sick in this church. On Sunday morning, they had about 300 people together at the furthest barricade. They had more than a dozen police officers, a lot more than a dozen, because they also say in the same article from Western Standard Online that there were dozens of RCMP cruisers that blocked access to the roads for kilometers surrounding the church. So you'd have to park your car and hike to get there in the winter with snow on the ground. And they put up a third level of defense fencing around this church on Saturday. I mean, the first day they showed up, they put up two layers of fencing around the church. Then they put a third one up on Saturday. And with the two layers of fences that they put up a black curtain on the outer one so that you couldn't see in. Is this a good use of taxpayer money? Is it a good use of taxpayer money to have dozens of cruisers and who knows how many officers? And so on Sunday morning, They said they had about 300 people gathered at the furthest barricade, and there's video of them pulling it down. And I got to say, when I saw the fence being pulled down, I was, yes, push back against this stuff. And then Karen was saying, well, I don't know that's the right approach. These people are looking pretty unruly. And then people are coming back and saying, no, no, it wasn't the church members. Some of the church members actually helped them to put the fence back up. And it's like, and I'm like, no, don't do that. I don't know. I mean, you know, where I am, we talked about this, and I told Karen, I said, I guess I'm where Peter was when they came for Christ in the garden. I'd cut off their ears. I'm just not there yet. I struggle with this stuff. You know, this was not actually cutting off their ears. No Mounties had their ears cut off, and they didn't even have their masks messed with. When you have the fence taken down, and this is where we're going back and forth, I said, yeah, but you know, the fence is a symbol. The fence is, there's nobody that you're threatening. This is not like the people who got rowdy on January the 6th. You could imply that they were coming after people, and it appeared that they were coming after people inside the building. There's nobody inside this building. They're not attacking anybody. They're not threatening anybody. This is not an assault. This is not an implied attack on anybody. This is an attack on the fence. And so I don't know. We have to think about these issues. Isn't it interesting that we have to think about this in our formerly free Western societies now? At what point do we take the civil disobedience? Does that involve the destruction of government tools of oppression? I would not take it as a person. I would not physically attack the police. But should we attack these instruments of repression? The protesters were singing songs and hymns, and some of them yelled at the police, and then some of them helped to put the fence back up. As the pastor there said, he said, we need to engage in civil disobedience, but we need to understand that also is going to involve consequences. And his opinion was that being subject to government meant that you're going to understand that there are consequences and you're going to take those consequences. The same way that Daniel was thrown in the lion's den, he didn't, you know, try to fight off the guards, or neither did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they were thrown in the furnace. I don't know. Still not there. not there totally yet. The neighbors are rejoicing, says the New American. They said the scene could have been lifted straight from the pages of Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. Yes, exactly. Government officials obediently carrying out state orders and fencing off a house of worship, having previously imprisoned the shepherd of the church. Alberta, Canada, where the citizens have the freedom to, quote, under the charter, this is what the charter says, the freedom to declare religious beliefs openly and without fear of hindrance or reprisal. The government is embarrassed at this point, said Pastor Coates in an interview on April the 8th. We are a black eye on our government because we continue to meet. I think the closure of our facility is necessary in order to prevent any further embarrassment to the government. And that's exactly what it is. It's an embarrassment to them. It's more than an embarrassment. It's by living their lives, they are exposing the lies of the government. By living their lives, they expose the lies. Same thing that is happening with John MacArthur in L.A. In one video, the RCMP is seen setting up the barriers while nearby a visibly emotional Pastor Coates appears to be wiping away tears. Several parishioners and local residents gathered at the scene in support, some carrying signs and some carrying a copy of the charter rights that were being flagrantly violated by the government. Coates maintains that he and his congregation will not be deterred from meeting. He said, the church is not a building. The church is the people of God who come together and worship the Lord Jesus Christ. So while it's unfortunate we don't have access to our facility, that in no way impedes or obstructs the work of the gospel, the building up of the body of Christ. I see this as a wonderful opportunity for the Lord to put his glory on display. We have met for 37 Sundays in a row without a single COVID case, let alone a breakout, let alone a super spreader, we could say, as the Kenny was saying. Don't make this a super spreader. Not a single case, let alone a breakout. We are exposing the reality, not only that these lockdown measures are unjust, but that they are harmful and unnecessary, said Coates. He's been a vocal critic of church leaders who apply Romans 13 as justification for their willingness to comply with dictators. He has termed such obedience to be pastoral malpractice. 100% right. Do we have that authority that we can tell people that they can't worship? Meaning the country. We refuse to tell people of this body that they can't come. Our responsibility as shepherds is to open our doors, and we are opening our doors for worship. So he's saying as shepherds, we don't have the government doesn't have the authority. We don't have the authority to tell people that. The biased media, says New American, sought reactions from the members of the community, many of whom seemed to be glad that the, quote, darn church, unquote, finally closed. Mainstream reporters interviewed few, if any, parishioners. The time is now, not in any kind of violent manner, but to peacefully return to your life. Alberta Premier, again, quoting Coates, Alberta Premier Jason Kenney, is an incredible disappointment to this province. I would say this to the Alberta people. The only way to get your province back is to take it back. People are not afraid. We need to return to our lives. If you're waiting for the government to hand you back your civil liberties, it's just not going to happen. He said, democracy at this point in time is dying because Kenny is not governing in accord with the mind of the people. It is abundantly apparent that Albertans want to go back to life as usual. And the excuse that it's a health issue that is preventing us from doing that is just an excuse. If everyone goes back to life as normal and the masks come off, the pandemic goes away. We are ultimately in control. We are in control. We are letting this be done to us. Some people are still very much afraid, or they hate the church, says the New American. One neighborhood snitch said, quote, a lot of us have made calls to the premier, to the justice minister, asking them why they're not taking any kind of action here. And, well, I guess they actually did today. And they love to talk about the fact that the AHS said they got 105 complaints since last July. How many different people was that? I mean, was that this person calling them 105 times? They had enough time to do that since July. But again, nobody's sick, not a single person, let alone an outbreak or a super spreader event. So how many people made these complaints? They don't tell you that. It could be the same virtue signaling busybody who did it 105 times. So on Friday, an entire news article in Alberta was devoted to just 75 new cases of grocery store workers in the Edmonton area. Cases, not even sick, cases, PCR cases. They said in Alberta, a population of 1.1 million, they said that they reported deaths, and again, we'll just take them at their word that this is not somebody dying with COVID, with a PCR positive test, but somebody dying from it. If you take it even at that, 2,005 cases out of 1.1 million people. You know what that is? 0.18%. It's about like the flu. So this raises a question. Why are the stores still open? Why are the churches closed? Costco has never closed, yet the authorities are barricading a church and the neighbors are rejoicing. This is where we are today. Going back to Coates again. He said, I was at Costco on Monday and it was packed. The premium outlet mall packed as well. There is no way What is happening now is in accord with the truth. There are so many doctors and experts that have come out and challenged the science and the medicine that is being propagated by the AHS and our government officials that it is now to the point where you are not responding to the information available to us, to we the people. Time to wake up and speak out. It's time to return to civil liberties that are ours as a nation. People are struggling with suicidal thoughts. Opioid addiction is going up. Drug addiction is going up. Our nation is really hurting. We hope not only to take care of God's people, but that we have hope in the Lord Jesus to help you live life to get you through these times. And again, it's going to be the pastor saying this, like the sheriff I talked to last week from Arizona, David Hathaway, saying the same thing. He said, we're seeing drug abuse and violence and suicide skyrocketing because of these lockdowns. People in the communities know what's going on. It's these distant bureaucrats and their isolation that don't know, don't care. He went on to say, you have to assess whether you want to live this life in a lockdown type of society where your civil liberties are removed from you, or whether you're willing to go back to freedom at the risk of contracting the virus. And that is where the gospel of Christ comes in. If you're in Christ, you're not afraid of death. He said, I'm not a political revolutionary. I'm simply here in obedience to Jesus Christ. He said, when I found out they were locking the church up, I had excitement in my heart. I mean, they're going to go toe-to-toe with the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. In general, that doesn't go well. Kind of like the situation with the British when they were outmanned, outgunned by the Nazis. And then Pearl Harbor happened. Like, oh, okay. Things are going to change. I want to play for you what John MacArthur had to say about this. Here we go.
Hey, I have a great privilege and honor, before we have a word of prayer and sing a hymn, to read a letter to you this morning. Grace Life Church up in Alberta, Canada, is meeting somewhere. We don't know where. James Coates said at this point it's not for the public to know. Amazing to have an underground church in Canada. This because the government of Alberta triple fenced the church in and locked it so people couldn't go there. I think the latest statistics I've seen are that 2,000 people have died through the months of COVID, 80% of them in senior homes. The remaining ones had some kind of comorbidity out of the millions of people who live in Alberta. So there's no legitimate reason to do what they did to this church, especially at this point in the COVID life, but they did. And this is a first for the Western world to have the government lock out believers from a church, and that after imprisoning James Coates, who's a graduate of the Master's Seminary, in maximum security prison. They led him away in chains, and he was there for about 35 days.
All right, and that's a video clip from Christian Republic. Find them on YouTube, courtesy of them. I want to play one more clip for you. I know we're over time here, but I want to finish up on this thought. You know, there's a lot of politics involved, a lot of politics involved in these health issues. There's a lot of politics involved in these religious issues. And the Southern Baptists have a guy who works for them. His name is Russell Moore. And he is head of what they call the ERLB, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Board. And throughout all of this, he's been completely silent about religious liberty, has nothing to say. And it's not just that this is in Canada. I mean, you know, Southern Baptists, they operate missions worldwide. And this is a Christian issue worldwide. You would think that he would chime in on this, but no. Crickets. Complete crickets. But then when it comes to ethics, he is pushing the vaccines, even to the extent of writing op-ed pieces saying, is the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine unethical? Oh, no, he thinks that we ought to be thanking God for our cannibal medicine. He said, the country seems almost right on the verge of hope. Vaccines were developed at record-setting speed and have proven safe and effective. Not any of that is true. Our hope is not in a vaccine. The globalists want it to be that way. I reported last week how the EU was plotting back in 2018 and 2019 their slogans on the meetings that they had, talking about how they were going to run this ransomware attack on us. Lock things down. They've been practicing this since dark winter in 2001. Wargaming this. Practicing their propaganda. Practicing their lies. Training the people in government to do this to us. And they said in 2018, three things. The very first one was, in vaccines we trust. Not in God. Not in your immune system, your God-given immune system. No, it's in vaccines we trust. And that's what this guy at the Southern Baptist Ethics Board, Ethics and Religious Liberty, doesn't care about religious liberty, and he is lying to people about ethics. And when he goes on to try to make the case for this, he said, well, a denunciation from the Catholic Archdiocese of New Orleans, arguing that Catholics, when possible, should take one of the first two vaccines, but not the Johnson & Johnson version, because they argue it's linked to cloned stem cells derived from abortion that took place decades ago. Then he goes on to try to minimize this. He said, well, the bishop's recommendations were not quite as fiery as the headlines reported. They did not argue that taking the Johnson & Johnson vaccine was morally sinful or that no one should take it, just that Catholics should choose the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines over Johnson & Johnson. Well, I'll make that argument. I'll stand by that. He said, the work of our medical experts, the pharmaceutical industry, the government authorities is astounding to come up with a vaccine so quickly. Yeah, all they had to do was dump astronomical amounts of money. All they had to do was destroy our society in a ransomware attack. And all they had to do was skip the testing, Russell Moore. What is the matter with you? He says, we're right in a time of Thanksgiving to give thanks where Thanksgiving is due. Here's what he told NPR.
Reverend Russell Moore is president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. Reverend Moore, thanks for joining us. First of all, let's get this out of the way. Have you gotten the vaccine?
Yes, I've had both shots.
From what you can tell, this skepticism among the polling is capturing among people who I identify as white evangelicals. Does this have anything to do with religious beliefs?
No, this doesn't have anything to do with religious beliefs. It's instead about the mistrust and distrust that's evident in American society right now. And plus, I think some of it has to do with the fact that we've been isolated from one another in lots of ways for over a year. And much of the way that misinformation and disinformation gets combated is with people in conversation with one another. And that's why lots of us are doing what we can to say vaccination is not only something that's acceptable for Christians, it's something we ought to thank God that we have the technology for, because it's going to get us back to doing the things that we need to do quicker.
So we should thank God for that. And he says one of the reasons that this is happening is because it's usually in face-to-face conversation where you get rid of disinformation. That is a blatant lie. If they really believe that, they would not be suspending speech on social media. They're saying exactly the opposite. We don't want people talking to each other. We want them listening to people who are authorities on high, the argument from authority. We don't want people say, have you seen anybody get sick? No, I haven't seen anybody get sick. Have you seen people getting hurt with the vaccine? Yeah, I've seen a lot of people. I know a lot of people who've gotten sick with it. They don't want that kind of conversation on social media. They don't want it personally. That's why they have isolated us. That's why they have shut down social media. But let's talk about why we should be thankful for this. He goes on in his essay talking about how wonderful the science of cannibalism is. He says it's important to note that although the cell lines potentially originated from abortions, no cells remain from the original fetal tissue in these cloned cells. And the cell lines no longer contain fetal tissue or body parts. That's right. They've separated out the eye and the heart and things like that. They just go down to the cell level. So what? You could say the same thing about cannibalism. You could say, just eat it. It's just the muscle, right? The meat is just the muscle. We don't have the head anymore. See, it's not human anymore, right? We've taken out all those things that identify it as a human, as an individual. So just go ahead and consume the meat, the tissue, the fetal tissue, because it's good for you. And just thank God before you eat your neighbor. That's the ethics from the Southern Baptist. Now, there's a big political movement to get rid, as a matter of fact, a lot of churches, because of this Ethics and Religious Liberty Board, and because of this particular individual who used to work as a staff member for Democrat politicians, who ran for office as a Democrat, who divided the Southern Baptists back in 2019 because he was focused not on ethics or religious liberty, but he was focused on being a never-Trumper. And so he created division over politics within his own organization. But now he is pushing cannibalism and toxins and pharmacia. He says, still, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is already developed. Does taking it involve moral cooperation with abortion? Yes, it does, Russell. Are you going to fund the criminals who do this? The criminals who were exposed by Dalyden? Dalyden, who was then attacked and is still being attacked. They're trying to destroy his life. Kamala Harris. Then Javier Becerra, both of them now vice president and attorney general. I mean, not attorney general. He was attorney general in California. He's now HHS. And then whoever is still there. We had the FDA still ordering fresh, not frozen body parts, custom orders being provided by the abortion clinics. This medical research is still going on. If you fund this, you are participating in the ongoing profits of death and the medicine of cannibalism. Opposing unethical means of research does not mean that people must shun medical treatments that are discovered through these means, says the ethicist, quote-unquote, Russell Moore. Now, let me tell you something. The fruit of a poison tree will poison, ethically. You support big pharmacia? You should be boycotting this cannibal industry. This is Joseph Mengele's prescription for medication. This is his justification for the experiments that he did. See, the end justifies the means. Yes, we took, in order to save lives of our Nazi soldiers who were shot down over the English Channel and who froze to death before we could get them out. They didn't drown. They froze to death. So we decided that we'd take people in the prison camps and we would freeze them until they died and then see how we could revive them. And after torturing to death several hundred people, we found some way that we could revive people after being dead for about 15, 20 minutes or whatever that was. That was published. That was the only thing that was published about Operation Paperclip, and it caused a public outrage. And, of course, they incorporated it into the Captain America stories. But that was real. Is that legitimate? Is it legitimate to freeze people to death just to see if you can, by trial and error, revive them somehow? He said, we should not do away with our peace treaties with Japan because those treaties were the result of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You hear how messed up this guy is? First of all, in a just war, maybe he, as a Christian ethicist, would be aware of the just war formulation that has governed Christian nations. In a just war, you not only don't go to war unless you are attacked, and you do it for defensive purposes, which is why we were in that war, But you also try to end it as quickly as possible. And you try to minimize the loss of human life. And quite frankly, we were justified to respond to it. I know that FDR let the defenses down, that he wanted them to attack, but they did it. They did it. And when you're attacked, you have a right to shut down that aggression. And we weren't the only nations that they preemptively attacked. Now that is our policy. Preemptive war. We had justification for World War II. We followed it legally. We had a deliberation about it and a formal declaration of war. We did what we could to try to minimize the loss of life, because even though they were backed into a corner, they were going to fight man-to-man in the islands. And so you cannot, in any way, shape, or form, compare the abortion for body parts, the Mengele medicine, the cannibal vaccines. You can't compare that to the atomic bombing that ended the war, peace, as an end justifies the means argument. Doesn't even make it to that. He said a patient receiving an organ transplant from a murder victim would not in any way be morally responsible for murder. Withholding the life-saving transplant because of the murder would be in and of itself wrong. Let me say this again, Russell. You are buying products from hired killers. They have put out a contract for fresh, not frozen, livers from babies at a certain age. These are the people we're talking about dealing with. There is no compromise to be made here. What is the matter with him? What is the matter with a Southern Baptist that they would give this guy any money at all? This is a sad state of where we are in this country. Because it's not just being totally gaslighted by the lies that have taken away the rule of law and the liberties that generations fought for. But we are being led by lying political operatives. That's it for today's show. Thank you for listening.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.